Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the February 18th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wondered if everyone would please silence any electronic devices that they may have with them. I point out that the emergency exits are in the back corner, the stairwell on my right, and in the front corner, the stairwell on my left. Ladies and gentlemen, would you stand with me and pledge allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll, please?
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
That's all of us, and I declare a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I think we're going to move right into privilege of the floor for the public. I would remind that this is the public's opportunity to speak to us for up to 3 minutes, and we will keep some time, and Kathy Covert, our board clerk, will signal you when there's 1 minute to go and when your time is up. Please be respectful of other people and with your time commitment tonight. We have a lot of blue cards that have come in, and we're going to try to take them in the order that they did come in. First, I have Alan Thornton, and then I have Dan Siebert.
Good evening.
Welcome. Could you tell us where you're from?
My name is Alan Thornton. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Rescue Mission Alliance of Syracuse. And for 127 years, our mission has been to share hope, end hunger and homelessness, change lives, and strengthen communities one person at a time. And we believe that every time we are able to move someone out of homelessness and help them find employment, help them find housing, help them find hope and stability, that we are changing lives and strengthening the communities that we're serving. We've been excited to be part of the Ithaca community for the last year, first by opening the Ithaca Thrifty Shopper on Elmira Road, and then with the Court Street Place opening a year ago in March, where we provide permanent supportive housing for 10 men who are moving out of homelessness and forward with their life. I'm here to announce that on March 1st, the Rescue Mission will take over operations of the emergency shelter on State Street, and we are very excited also to be taking over operations of the Friendship Center. And so we look forward to serving the Ithaca community and serving the homeless in this community and ultimately helping to end hunger and homelessness. We will be having a grand opening on April 16th, and you all are invited to come and see that. And we thank you so much for the support of this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for coming and tell us about that important thing. Dan?
Hi, my name is Dan Seberg. I'm the Chief Programs Officer of the Rescue Mission up in Syracuse. I have the task of getting it all up and running and running smoothly. And so we have been diligently working over the last couple months, putting the contracts in place, interviewing the right staff, and we will take over the operations as of March 1st. We look to initially continue the operations that the Red Cross had been doing. We will implement our own programming, our own staff, but we're very excited to be part of the Ithaca community, and we want to be known as the bridge for the homeless. We want to bridge the homeless to the right services, to shelter, to housing, to meals, to permanent housing, and we want to help everyone get to their highest level of self-sufficiency. So we do not believe people should be living in shelters. We want people to be independent, and we will work to move them towards that as quickly as we possibly can.
Thank you, Mr. Sieber. Mike Kaplinka-Lair. Then I have Martin Hatch.
Mike Kaplinka-Lair from Lansing and also program manager of Court Street Place for Rescue Mission. I'll pass out some brochures.
Former member of the Tompkins County Legislature and former chair.
Good to see you all. Congratulations to those who are new and congratulations to those who are reelected as well. I just want to tell you one quick story about a resident at the Court Street Place residence who moved on to Independence on November 1st. We had actually helped him with a small security deposit loan, and today he stopped by and paid back the very last balance of that loan in his own apartment. We helped him with furniture. He has a job, very steady job locally, and doing quite well. And then he has then passed it forward. His brother was in some struggling situations, and he actually was able to rent a two-bedroom, and now his brother's living with him. He's giving support to his brother. So that's the kind of community stability that we're offering to people who were formerly homeless and in situations that were not necessarily of their own choosing, but now have attained stability. I also wanted to mention that there is, as you're quite aware, I know, a continuum of care committee that has a 10-year plan to end homelessness in Tompkins County. Many places think that that plan is on the shelf. That plan is really for the federal government to get grants. I'm here to tell you that that plan is real, it's doable, it's possible, and if any community in America can end homelessness in Tompkins County in 10 years, Tompkins County actually can do it, is doing it. There'll be a celebration of hope, some of the progress this Saturday night up at what's the old Clarion, and you're all invited, and we'll certainly keep you posted as other developments like Second Wind Cottages and other outreach services happen in this community. But thank you for your support over the years. I know you've been very invested in affordable housing and other ways to prevent homelessness in the first place. So thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Mike. Artie Hatch.
Yes, hi, I'm Martin Hatch. I'm from the town of Dryden. I remember many, many years ago that the jail expansion was turned down. And I realized that as I'm looking at things, the situation for alternatives to jail have improved tremendously since that time. So it seems a little odd to me that there would be a move to try and expand the jail now, and I recommend to you that you defer action on it. I understand that the CJT committee has formed a task force to determine, among other things, just how the jail is currently being used, to get statistics together, to find out if there are perhaps ways in which the cycling out of prisoners that takes place now to, or at least detainees, that takes place to other sites really needs to be at a level that would require you to put a large amount of money into expanding the jail. And if this task force is going to be putting together statistics, it seems rather imprudent for you to take any action that would move ahead with an expansion until you know what's happening. So what I suggest to you is that, as I understand, there's going to be a resolution brought to defer action on expanding the jail. I strongly urge you to defer your action, any actions that you would take to move towards expansion of the jail, at least until you know what's happening there and how it potentially might be the momentum to improve conditions where people need to use the jail can be assessed, and you can cut back on boarding out and other things by other means. So that's my spiel. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hatch. I have Sophie Zabala, and I have Pat Duff. Sophie?
Hello, my name is Sophie Zapala. and I'm a resident of West Hill. I'm here to present several important and pressing issues to you. October 1st, 2013 has been etched in the collective memory of all the residents on West Hill. It is the day on which this body decided to sell the Biggs property to NRP Properties, a private investment firm headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio, without performing a complete New York State mandated environmental impact analysis in face of almost unanimous opposition from the concerned residents of West Hill. That day should be etched in your memories too. We learned on October 1st that this county body does not respond to the concerns of the citizens and that our government, both the officials and the elected, has run away from the people. On behalf of many West Hillers, I would like to thank Peter Stein, Kathy Luz Herrera, Julie Kiefer, and Pam McKissy, who is no longer here, but I'm sure that she maybe listens, for casting opposing votes. You displayed civic courage and understanding of your role as legislators. It is unfortunate that you were a small minority. We also learned on October 1st that we cannot count on our West Hill legislator, Will Burbank, to represent our concerns. We would have been better off, Will, if your seat were empty that night. One less vote against your constituents. You demonstrated that you put your own political agenda and convictions before the will and valid concerns of your constituency. Of all the people here, you had the most intimate knowledge of the extent of the opposition to this cell by the people who live on West Hill. You willfully and brazenly disregarded our legitimate demands for the county to perform a proper environmental impact analysis and instead align yourself with the out-of-state for-profit investment firm. You do not understand your role, and you must go. Our community had rallied before the fateful vote. We wrote you many open letters. We had more than 60 signatures on the online petition addressed to this body. We directly reached out to you, the legislators, and made statements opposing the project to various local government agencies, all to no avail. I have watched the video recording of the October 1st meeting several times since then, and each time I notice yet another manipulation, misrepresentation, leading question, and outright false statement from various participants and presenters. I can't dedicate more time to this now, but in the spirit of keeping them honest, the October 1st, 2013 legislature session needs to be analyzed and the lesson learned documented. The citizens should not have to take their government to court to ensure due process, and yet, in absence of any response from the county government, this is what the community had to do. Six members of the Ithaca community have filed an Article 78 petition in the New York State Supreme Court against Tompkins County.
Can you sum up, please?
Yes, I just Pat Dodd was here and signed up. She was to deliver this part of the statement, but she was called on a personal emergency. So may I use her time?
The other folks have 3 minutes. Perhaps we can come to you at the end.
I can read the statement for you.
You can give my...
Can I sign up?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Just say who you are and
you don't have to sign
where you live.
Thank you so much.
Where are we?
Here.
Okay. I have to read it. Okay.
Yes.
So my name is Mario, and I'm from Ithaca. I mean, I live in Ithaca, but clearly not from here. NRP Properties and Better Housing for Tompkins County, this is from before, okay. This lawsuit seeks to nullify the decision made on October 1st, 2013 by you, the county legislator, to allow the sale of public land to NRP Properties for the purpose of development without conducting a full Sekura environment impact analysis. Since then, local citizens have formed the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association to oppose the sale of undeveloped public land in an environmentally sensitive area. On December 10, 2013, the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association filed a full FOIA request with Tompkins County seeking documents detailing the apparent partnership between the county and NRP properties. The county has refused to release any documents to the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association. I, too, filed a FOIA request, and since November, only half of the requested documents have been released to me. Please note these violations have been reported to the Office of the New York State Attorney General and the Committee on an Open Government in Albany. It is fair to ask, why will you not release documents about the sale of public land to NRP properties? This sale is riddled by possible conflicts of interest and questionable use of federal funds received through the EPA's Climate Showcase Fund. Ed Marks refused to meet with us regarding the Climate Showcase project, but he did find the time to fly to several environmental conferences. The documents I managed to obtain show that quite substantial project management fees have been paid out to date. This prompted yet another FOIA request to obtain more details about those fees at a rate of $40 per hour. And so we are still waiting for that response. Finally, a short comment about the tax credit program. It was obvious that nearly none of you legislators knew much about the tax credit program on the night of the vote, and you should have. The devil is in the detail. Here is a CD, containing NRP's application for New York State tax credit funding for the proposed Lansing project that was defeated through community opposition. Please add this content to the record of this meeting, as this is very relevant to Big's project property. The public has a right to know how our New York State taxpayers' money is used by out-of-state private investment firms to further their profits and siphon wealth from our communities. You might remember that NRP's statement that taxes will be paid on their operating income. Well, see for yourself in this information. How many taxes can be paid over 15 years on a projected yearly loss of more than $100,000? In closing, the Article 78 proceeding should have served as a public notice and reminder that our representatives and government agencies are not above the law and that the people have means to keep them accountable. That's good. I would like to ask you all to self-reflect about your commitment to representative democracy, I will ask that too, and the role you took and swore to play in it. We are ready to work with you to build stronger communities that practice responsible environmental stewardship and provide opportunities to all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to stop just for a second and say, folks, you have an opportunity to speak as our guests, and you can say what you want about elected officials, but if I detect people making attacks on our employees and staff, I will exercise my option to stop that. Next we have Yvonne Roberts.
Of course you would say that just before I get up here, right? I'm here tonight because kids are all on vacation this week. I'm from Groton, and I haven't seen my grandkids in, it seems like, forever. I have three grandkids in foster care, and the Department of Social Services refuses to let me see them. I support the homeless and the men that were here that brought the Thrifty Shopper down. Carmen Geedy went up to Syracuse to get those guys to bring the Thrifty Shopper down. Carmen Geedy holds services on Sunday over at his garage. Many, many homeless people that were in the jungle and many, many people attend his services Sunday morning. Carmen Geedy and his wife are also foster parents. I go there and attend services with foster care kids, but yet I can't see my own grandkids that are in foster care. Carmen and his wife have offered to be supervisors to supervise the visits with my grandchildren and actually have my grandchildren at their house and supervise the visits, and the Department of Social Services has refused that too. I just don't get it. I don't get any of that. It's like I'm being told that I don't have the best interest of my grandchildren in mind or whatever. I think what it is I think Tompkins County's foster care system can't live up to my standards, and the department doesn't want me to know about it because I have grandchildren and they all talk. This one over here is 2 years old. She's never been in foster care, but she talks and she tells me what goes on when she's not at my house. And she's had babysitters and she's come back and told me what's happened at the different babysitters' houses. And I believe that social services is afraid that my grandchildren are going to come back and tell me what's happening at their foster care parents' houses, and I'm not going to like it, and they're afraid of what's going to happen because I don't like it. And I think that's a big part of the problem. I asked who the counselor was for my grandchildren. I was refused to know who the counselor was for my grandchildren because I feel that I should be able to talk to the counselor of my grandchildren since my daughter is in Credo and she's not able to do that. And if there's a problem, the counselor could sit down and talk to me. If they think I have a mental problem, who better to send me to than a counselor? There's just something very, very wrong with this whole thing, and it's a big cover up. I don't know if any of you got to the bottom of it yet, but, you know, if I'm throwing $500 a week at an attorney because of this, I plan on getting my money back one way or another in the end, along with my grandchildren. And I really don't want to have to go the lawsuit way again. I mean, that was a lot of problems for a lot of people, and you guys had to go to Rochester and get attorneys and all kinds of stuff, and let's not do that again. We can do this another way.
Thank you. I have Chuck Roberts, then I have Martha Ferger.
Yes, I'm Chuck Roberts, Bonnie's husband, and I'm here to address the situation again, why the Human Services of Tompkins County has banned us from getting services from them. And I think it's due time for the Human Services to become more human. Let families take care of families and not take children from their families. Now, this has happened more than once in this county, more than once ever. I've been a resident of this county for some years. I do contract work for the county, and I like to be proud of the place. And I don't see how I can be proud of a human service that is not human, in banding people from their services and taking custody of children that are wanted and loved and need their home family. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Martha Ferger.
I'm Martha Ferger from the village of Dryden. I'm here today representing the Social Justice Council of the First Unitarian Church in Ithaca. We have been hearing a lot from friends about their fears of an officer of the Sheriff's Department who is alleged to have injured arrestees on two separate occasions. These people express fear of what might happen if they would encounter this officer. Without judging that situation in any way, I would just like to say that to me and to our group, it points up the need for some sort of citizens police oversight board at the county level. I know that the city of Ithaca has such a body. I know many other municipalities do, and so I would urge you to consider whether that's appropriate for our county and to do it very soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Sherry Korthewitz. Good lucky guess.
Hi, my name is Sherry Korthewitz, and I live at 502 North Albany Street, and I've lived in Ithaca a little over a year now, and I'm coming here to speak tonight hoping that you will vote yes to this resolution 4651 and putting a one-year moratorium on adding beds to the new jail, to the jail facility, the Tompkins County Jail Facility. I'm sure you all are aware that our prison system is not just any longer, so that, you know, the people that are spending time in prison now are not. We have a lot of criminals, but it's not petty crooks and pot smokers, and you could go on, and people that own debt. But, you know, why do we need more beds? It would be one of my questions. And then from what I understand, I went to look up on the website of the Regional and County Jails website, and you guys had actually really done a good job because you didn't build as big a jail as they wanted, because they wanted a bigger jail, apparently. But since 1995, under the SCOC, and I'll have that for you in a moment, which is the State Commission of Correction, and it's an independent agency. Since 1995, over 30 counties have built 6,000 new jail beds. And that's based, and so what they do then every year is the number of beds the county must build based on this SCOC's prediction of future inmate population. But I found it interesting that I went on to read some, and this is quoted, I wrote it out, because I don't have my computer handy, but some counties are seeking to reduce corrections needs through alternatives to our incarceration. Beginning in 1998, Tompkins County began adding over $500,000 to their annual budget for alternative programs that is using for establishing an expansion of a 73-bed facility. Since overcrowding persisted, SCOC insisted that a 160-bed facility be built. But the county began planning expansion both after jail population dropped due to the alternatives program. The county scaled back the expansion plans, offering to build 104 beds with a space that would allow up to 196 beds for the county. And SCOC currently, we're at an impasse with them. So they want us to build this bigger facility, and because we're not taking any action, they're using its power to approve or deny variances and transfers to pressure the county to comply with its determination concerning jail size and timing. SCOC has removed the county's variances for double bunking and has threatened to reorder the county's jail declassification system to further reduce its capacity, which would force more inmates to be boarded out. So this is sort of like a tactic. I mean, you know, they board these people out and they say, oh, it costs so much money, but why does it cost so much money, and why are we boarding people out, and why are people being arrested? So there's a lot of questions, and I think this year moratorium would really maybe give us all time as a community to try and find some more love and respect, and I really don't think more jail beds are the answer. And thank you so much for your time. All right.
Thank you. I would point out there are four chairs over here if someone wants to sit in them. There's some chairs over here they could use at the table. Next, I have Chris McConkie.
Hello, I'm Chris McConkie from the town of Enfield. That's on your side of the highway, Jim. Our town is kind of divided, as you know. I'm here to support the moratorium on jail expansion. If jail is a necessary evil in our society, it is an evil nonetheless. And though there may be people of good heart in the institution, you know, administering the jail, just as there are good people of good heart within social services, any time that you have an institution that permits people to exercise power over other people, there is going to be abuse. And I, for one, am not really excited about the prospects of building a larger jail industry in Tompkins County. And I support everything that Marty Hatch said, and this woman here said about looking into the alternatives for incarcerations. But, you know, I also want to know what the full extent of this project is. I want to see transparency. I don't want to see any kind of segmentation. I don't want to see, like, we have, oh, we want these beds later, but we're going to build this, and that's going to be the basis of building something bigger later. I don't want to see, like, an Onondaga Correction Facility Hall of Justice in this county. I think that we're smart enough that we can find some other alternatives, because once you build that institution that gets bigger, that it becomes the institution. And for all the people with good intents in there, it is still an institution and is subject to a lot of abuse. And finally, I would like to say that when we're looking at, you know, this jail expansion, I also would like this committee to solicit some of the opinions of family of the incarcerated and to think about the social cost of incarceration, not just in comparison and comparing to what it saves, you know, to have these programs, but what are the social costs to the families? And is the jail actually, you know, promoting some social good, or is it promoting some social evil? It's going to be a mix. And it's not an easy thing to negotiate, but building a larger institution is not the answer. And I would like to know, totally transparent, what the costs are, what the final plan is. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Iceland Hogan.
Say the name again.
Iceland Hogan, A-I-S-L-A-N.
She's over there.
Okay. I don't know if this is gonna. Okay. So my name's Aislinn Colgan. I live in Ithaca, and I'm here to talk to urge you to consider passing a moratorium, voting for a moratorium on the jail expansion. And there's a number of reasons, and I know that maybe some people here feel exhausted or feel like this.
Suspend just a moment, please. You're making noise. We can't hear. Could you resume, please?
All right. So there's a lot of reasons people have said why we should at the very least consider putting a moratorium on expanding our jails. And the one that I want to call everyone's attention to is that the United States has the largest population of prisoners globally, and that the movement towards mass incarceration, as many people already know, maybe it's already been discussed in here, but this is something that mirrors our legacy of slavery. And a lot of people, maybe when we think back on this horrible legacy of enslaving human beings, taking human lives and turning them into profit, we would think, oh, if I were around then, I would have stopped that. I would have done something about that. And here we're at this critical moment in our modern-day society where we have something that really mirrors that, and that while Tompkins County Jail may be very different in a lot of ways from the larger scale mass incarceration that's happening in this country, that we are on the counties and the county jails are on the cusp of this mass incarceration movement. The counties are now being pushed by this woman mentioned it, the state. The counties are being pushed to expand the jails. And though this might be just a small, oh, it's only 7 beds, we're at a critical moment here. And you are all the people that fortunately are have the opportunity to do something about this. You have the opportunity to take a stand, and at the very, very least, just a year. Just take a year and think about it. I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Next, we have Jim Murphy, then Joanne Cipolla-Dennis.
Hi, my name is Jim Murphy, 40 years a veterans activist. I'm a retired high school administrator. I was director of Ed at Wilderness School for Juvenile Delinquents. And we need an expansion of creativity and compassion, not jails. I'm going to speak specifically about veterans. There's over 40,000 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans in prison today. I love it when politicians wave the flag and call everybody a hero, but we neglect the fact that a lot of people end up in jail because of mental health issues and drug issues. It's an abomination that this many vets are in jail. On any given day in this county, out of every 100 prisoners that cross our paths, 5 are going to be war vets, and another 5 are just going to be veterans. So about 10% of our jail population are going to be veterans. Right now, we've got all kinds of great examples. Buffalo is doing wonderful things in terms of alternatives to incarceration. If the county got involved with veterans, you'd reduce your jail population by 10%. But when then you start adding in, 30% are clearly mental health issues. We need to learn how to communicate, coordinate, and use the VA in area veterans groups. I want to shout out two sheriffs, two Tompkins County sheriffs, who we had a delicate situation a little over a year ago with two veterans who are really heroes. You have to realize, if you've been in combat, you know what a hero is. It's not everybody. Heroes are people that really, really have your back. They're the people that take high risk to get their units through. Most of us are just glad to come home. We're not heroes. But these two vets were heroes, and they were having a major drug issue. And the two officers handled the situation very sensitively, and they allowed the process to go on, and they allowed us to get involved. One of them was a three-tour combat medic. The other was a two-tour combat medic. Those that know anything about veterans know that those are the combat medics of the highest rate of PTSD that there is. Because of these officers, we were able to get one to go to Bath VA for drug rehab, and the other one, we got out of the area into an area where he was surrounded by people to protect him from himself. So, therefore, because we have officers like that, we're in a great shape. It only takes one or two officers that are discourteous to stain the entire department and the character and the effectiveness of the entire department. There's no mediation. Most ideas are communication is dismissed. So that's you can't disregard what the community has a right to. So I will also recommend that we take a long look at having the opportunity for the community to be part of the voice and the oversight of the police department for the benefit of our good police officers. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Joanne Cipolla-Dennis, then Ira McKinley.
Hi, Joanne Cipolla-Dennis, Freeville. I have two very separate issues. The first, tonight I'm speaking as a member of the LGBTQ action team of the Social Justice Council of the First Unitarian Society of Ithaca. We are seeking further investigation into the case of the former Ithaca police officer, Stephen Morocco, now a deputy sheriff. After researching Amy Crockford's claims, the action team conducted interviews with District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson, Sheriff Lansing, Amy Crockford, and two witnesses who appear tonight to her arrest. This eyewitness testimony that was never considered by District Attorney leads us to request a new investigation by an independent special prosecutor before her statute of limitations is up in 4 months.
Can I just say, please, if you're talking about a particular employee and there's a complaint, there is a process to file that. Can we move on, please?
Yep. The members think it's possible that Ms. Crockford's civil rights may have been violated and she may have been wrongfully arrested. Ms. Crockford's charges for disorderly conduct were dismissed. She may have been subjected to inappropriate physical harm and abusive language. There is strong evidence that she was injured during while she was in custody. According to the witnesses, Ms. Crockford followed instructions to leave the State Street Diner. The bouncer's written statement confirms he did not hurt Ms. Crockford. She confirms that.
Excuse me, but I kind
witnesses
of cautioned.
I have 3 minutes, please.
I cautioned when you're talking about a particular employee, and there is a process that you can go ahead. So would you please move on to your other
I'm reading the statement from the LGBTQ Action Team.
I don't doubt that.
And I'm going to finish.
Can you finish, please?
Eyewitnesses present tonight report the district attorney never took or considered their full statement. There was a videotape discovered 5 months after the incident that's remarkably similar to the reenactment of Ms. Crockford's complaint of 48 hours after her arrest. The action team believes that an injustice may have been served, and we want justice to be served. We request the rights of Ms. Crockford be respected by initiating a review of the case in its entirety by a special prosecutor. Let justice be done now. It has been a long time coming for Ms. Crockford and this community, and we are not going to be silent about it anymore. It's signed by all members of the LGB Action Team.
Your time is up.
And if you want justice, please raise your hand in this matter. Thank you. Let the record show.
The record will not show anything that
the record shows the public is aware.
Thank you, and thank you for disrespecting this group. Ira McKinley.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough act to follow, but I just want to let you know that my name is Ira McKinley. I am a film producer and director who I was born and raised here in Ithaca, and I've been back here for 3 months. And what you see here today is people coming together, organizing on this thing about jail expansion. My documentary shows the effect of what mass incarceration does to people. One of the segments does take place here in Ithaca, and even though it doesn't cover the jail expansion, it covers the agony that these things happen when mass incarceration and expansion of jails, instead of dealing with the problem of educating our community and making resources available to them, things go into chaos. What I've seen from coming back here after 20 years is expansion. And I see people where what used to be Woolworths is now a library, and you guys have expanded that greatly, you know. But then I see people that you ship out. So there's gentrification going on here. People cannot afford rent. People cannot afford to stay in this place. And then there's no education where they can be able to create jobs and resources. It's funny because our executive producer, Sam Pollard, who did Slavery by Another Name, and he did Eyes on a Prize. He produced an Eyes on a Prize episode, and in the episode, which was in 1985, it had Angela Davis in it. And Angela Davis was talking about mass incarceration 30 years ago. Now, here we go 30 years in the future, and it's becoming a global issue, or a nationwide issue here in America, because we all know the statistics, we all know what's going on, but what you don't see is the effects of the families that mass incarceration produces. What I would like to see here is us be, Ithaca, be a community that's above its time. I have a chance with my documentary to go to socially relevant film festival and being on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And also doing a TED Talk about mass incarceration. I want to be able to say in my hometown of Ithaca, they put a stop to this. And they did things that was beneficial to the community. not saying, okay, well, Ithaca's just like every other community that's going to just build a jail and just throw people in there and not care about the after effects it does to the people and the families. We have a great chance here to be, you know, we have a great chance to stop this whole memorandum and to build and find other solutions. And I just think if we all think about that, then this could be a great place to live again.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley. I have Ryan Loss, and I can't read the end of that. My apologies. Could you state your name when you come up, please?
Hi, my name is Ryan Losinger, and I'm speaking on behalf of my friend Amy Crockford. She has a cold. She can't talk. So I'm going to be reading her statement. With all due respect, I cannot for a second imagine that any of you, if any of you were ever subjected to the abuse I endured, that Stephen Morocco would not have faced criminal charges, and he certainly would not be employed in law enforcement. Sometimes I feel like people do not believe me about what happened over 4 years ago when I was assaulted and ridiculed by this man while he was acting in his official capacity as a police officer. The repercussions of his actions have been absolutely zero. He has even been somewhat rewarded.
I guess I would have to caution the same way on this. We're asking that there not be personal attacks on our employees and staff. If there is a complaint, there is a process to do that.
Knowing the facts is a way of getting justice.
How could it be that I submitted a formal complaint about this man?
I'm asking that you please don't do that.
Detailing what he did to me, and 6 months later, a videotape surfaced of him pantomiming my claims in exact and precise motions. The only way that is possible is that I am telling the truth. There has not been a proper investigation in my claims, and I am left guessing as to why. For one, the District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson is friends on some level with Morocco's sister.
You refuse to stop. Jonathan Wood, I'm going to ask our county attorney to speak as to the issue of these kind of attacks and whether we can allow them to continue.
D.A. Wilkinson is on record saying with a soft and passionate voice.
Excuse me, please suspend.
That Stephen is not that
please
kind of
suspend.
Guy.
Please suspend. We're asking. I've asked the county attorney to comment.
Well, under the law, the meeting is open. Public comment is permitted as the legislature decides. Can decide to allow public comment in whatever manner it wants to address whatever issues it wants. So it's really up to the legislature to decide. Whether it has public comment, and if so, what the public comment could include or could not include.
Thank you. This is our meeting.
So this is not public comment, then?
Yes, it is. Most certainly is.
But I'm not allowed to speak my mind.
I would ask you to continue, but please make no more personal attacks.
Please do.
I'm going to read it as it's written. What does that make me? A liar, a crazy woman, or just a citizen without connections and powerful friends. Charlie House, the bouncer, whose testimony seems to be golden with D.A. Wilkinson, is personal friends with Jason Lansing, the co-defendant in my lawsuit against Morocco and the city of Ithaca. Might his testimony be biased? In addition, his sworn statement is easily disproved should anyone decide to actually investigate. The video surveillance at the state diner, which D.A. Wilkinson claims proved that I was injured there, actually bolsters my claim. Witnesses that saw the arrest and will swear that I did not hit a tree with my face have never been given the opportunity to go on record and to give a sworn statement. To top it off, Stephen Morocco never even got a slap on the wrist. As a matter of fact, he was hired by Sheriff Ken Lansing, the father of his co-defendant, and is now a sheriff deputy. From what I understand, Morocco has already had other complaints against him regarding his conduct as an officer. What will it take to make the powers that be act on these legitimate accusations? Why is it that after 4 years, Morocco has been rewarded and has never faced any repercussions for his actions? Who will we have to hurt, or who will he have
How
to...
How long? We have exactly 1 minute left. Are you going to continue making attacks on one of our employees?
I'm almost finished.
You're not recognized. Please be quiet.
Who will he have to hurt or kill before any of you decide that it's time for action on this matter. I request that DA Wilkinson recuses herself from this case. I request that you might take a second to look into the evidence that this is public record and see for yourself that there is a problem here and someone is going to get hurt by this man, worse than he hurt me the night he slammed me around in his patrol car and mocked my sexuality. Thank you.
Heather Brett.
To go way down. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So my name's Heather, and I live in the town of Ithaca. And I, thank you. I'm one of the witnesses in the Amy Crockford case. And so I feel I have to start by saying I actually come from a family with some law enforcement folks in it. And up until this incident, I've had really good experiences with local law enforcement. And it was one of the things that made me very proud of my community. But that night outside the state diner, I saw something that just didn't seem right at all. It was a person that wasn't resisting, wasn't barely even speaking, wasn't gesturing, and yet it just seemed like there was a lot of force being used in the situation. And so I stayed and watched, which is something that I would not normally do because I think it's probably kind of embarrassing to get arrested. But I decided to stay and watch because it seemed like there was a lot of aggression happening for no reason that I could see. And so this is something that really concerns me. I love this town. I'm really proud of a lot of the cool things that we have here. And I would just really hate for this to make people afraid to seek help from our local law enforcement. And I also don't want it to stain the good work that people are doing. And so I felt like I needed to speak up because it's something that is near and dear to my heart. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a group that would like to talk. Dubian Campbell is going to speak first. Go ahead, Mr. Campbell.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Cool. We are all affected. We are all connected. Dubi and Ade. Dubi and Ade. I'm from the Bronx. Okay. Live in Ithaca. All right. They know not what they do. Handcuffed in orange jumpsuits, steel boots, looking like strange fruit strung from a short noose, and some apples don't fall far from the tree. A continuation of a legacy. State penitentiary prison guards with pot bellies, part of the machinery, an industrial monstrosity that feeds on human bodies. Do they know what they do? White sheets the way their forefathers used to. Stop the memorandum.
Oh. Stop the jail.
Stop the jail. Yes, yes.
Would you state your name, please?
We are all affected. We are all connected. Paula Ioannide, Ithaca, New York. What is money? It is our sweat, labor, thoughts, tears conformed into a symbol of value. What is taxpayer money? It is our sweat, labor, thoughts, tears conformed into a symbol of value and given to the state to manage, distribute, and allocate. What is the state? Who is the state? It is you and it is us. Representatives we have elected to make decisions about where to put a portion of our sweat, labor, thoughts, and tears. And us. Us who, through action or inaction, insistence or complicity, allow, encourage, lobby you, our representatives, to put our sweat and tears towards things we want and need. Things like schools and education, living wages, environmental protections, health care, social security pensions, roads and municipal services. And also things like warfare, militarism, a massive infrastructure of jails and prisons, immigrant detention centers, Guantanamo Bay. You rely on our public feelings to justify these investments in jails, prisons, militarism, border security, surveillance. Public feelings based on fear, possessive individualism, and a need for security that never arrives, no matter how big the guns get and no matter how big the state gets. It turns out that these death economies keep expanding the part of big government, never thought I'd agree with conservatives on this one, that is actually creating nothing but sickness, violence, disenfranchisement, exclusion, removal, and illegitimate suffering and death. While the state that is supposed to sustain lives keeps shrinking. Today, with a simple vote to support the moratorium on this, our jail expansion, our sweat and table and tears, you could take the first step with us to stop increasing public debt in a direction that only makes our community sicker, that only adds to systems of injustice, that only adds to deepening violence, that only adds to profiting off of the lives of poor people and communities of color, that only creates a class of people that are permanently and legally disenfranchised. I ask you to stop the to pass the moratorium, as this would give us time to create community solutions to the root causes that feed our jails. No more of our sweat and tears and labor allocated towards buildings and practices that spread social ills. We are all affected. We are all connected.
Please state your name.
We are all affected.
Please state your name.
I will.
Thank you.
We are all affected. We are all connected. Kayla Young, Ithaca, New York. I have this memory from kindergarten. For years, it would periodically manifest in my dreams, but only in fragments. It was 1999, the beginning of spring. I had just turned 6. I was spending the day with my pops, and we had to run to his job to pick up something before we got our day started. When we first got to the tombs, I sat next to one of his coworkers behind a big desk while he went to his locker. As I waited for him, I watched as inmates sat emotionless in their cells and others being transferred in and out of central booking. As my father walked out, he passed a young black inmate. They exchanged a look and the inmate nodded. They didn't say anything, but at the same time, they were saying so much. That young gentleman felt so familiar and looked like a family member to me. I didn't know him, but I walked out of there feeling like I abandoned him. As I grew up, I soon pieced together that officers weren't much different from the men they kept behind the bars. The space they spent a lot of time in together harbored an illness. It is an illness that is not contained in a cage, thus creating anxiety, depression, abuse, and PTSD. This is the social pathology of jails and prisons. It is like a poisonous gas. It suffuses the prisons, permeating the guards room and the larger world where politicians make decisions that send some to jails while freeing others. New York State is a leader in policy change. Tompkins County holds this power in its clutches. Do not lie to me and tell me you do not hold power. Do not repeat the same old bogus excuses that you've been saying. And if you choose to do so, that means you are content with remaining diseased yourselves. And I told you all once before, and I'm going to keep saying it again. I'm going to keep coming back, because I'm dead serious about saving my family. The one who was a guard, the one who killed Sean Bell, the one who's doing 20 years for conspiracy charges, the one who has 30-minute visits with her father, and the one who's 11 years old who just want to create. Many people believe time away from the cage will heal the wounds, but you have to live and do right to get that time. Thanks.
We are all affected. We are all connected. Allison Currier, Ithaca, New York. Jails are toxic. And this is not just an issue for Tompkins County residents. There's many, many students here today, and there will be many, many students coming back from Ithaca, Cornell, TC3, Cortland, all surrounding universities and colleges. It's time for us to get involved as students. We occupy the space in Ithaca. This town has taught us so much. We're here to learn. We're here to grow. And the things that we're learning in school is exactly what brought us here today as students. So the students are going to keep coming. So people with mental illness have a 65% greater chance of being arrested than those who are not mentally ill but who are committing the same infractions. This is important to understand. While Tompkins County is cutting our mental health service funding, this is not only a problem with mental illness, this is a problem with the environmental hazards. Environmental hazards associated with the construction and maintenance of detention facilities include wastewater treatment, hazardous waste and trash disposal, pesticide use, vehicle maintenance, power production, and many other key aspects of construction and maintenance of just the facility. So to expand this facility would increase those as well. The resources used to expand and maintain the jail, the county jail, could be going to the taxpayers and local residents. From an environmental perspective, the jail expansion will be using dirty fossil fuels. In jail, you're not treated as a human. You've no choice but to feed into a perpetuating racist system where you're trapped. Well, we on the outside need to speak out and stand up. About half of Tompkins County jail population is currently awaiting trial. The people who cannot afford to bail are often the individuals who are already unemployed and who are now in jail waiting to be accused of a crime that will make it even harder for them to find work. Can we take a second and think about our own families? We have a responsibility to stop the jail expansion because 7 more beds means 7 more families missing a father, a brother, a cousin, a sister, or a friend.
Can you sum up, please?
Yes. Innocent until proven guilty, these community members are separated from their families and communities. They are sitting in jail waiting to prove their innocence to a system that wants them to prove guilty at first sight. We will show New York State that it is possible to provide solutions for our community. The $1 million proposed for this project should be used in public services for the mentally ill, for job placement and programs and other employment resources, and educational programs and more. So please pass the moratorium.
We are all affected. We are all connected. Pequant, Ithaca, New York. If upheld, the greater Ithaca community is about to spend roughly $1 million to build 7 new cages. Cages that will house local fathers, mothers, brothers, and friends, disrupting families and entire portions of our community. These cages have me wondering, if money from the people is supposed to be used for the greater good of the people, then why would $1 million earned by the people of this community be used to incarcerate? I wonder how this money could be better used in a progressive, constructive way that keeps community members out of prisons rather than improve the community's ability to put them in. The following are a few ideas. Why don't we invest $1 million into our local public schools? The money could be used in countless productive ways that could work to create jobs for teachers, expand and improve curriculum to engage all students, craft extracurricular programs, work to improve retention and graduation rates for students from underserved communities, and ensure that kids stay in school and out of jail. Or we could use the money to improve services for community members suffering from substance addiction and mental illness. $1 million could help build cohesive programs that would improve the community's mental and physical health, deter residents from criminal behavior, and reduce the local prison population. Or we could use the money to provide services for the formerly incarcerated, working to improve housing, education, and employment possibilities. The money could supplement existing programs which help the formerly incarcerated ease into the pace of everyday life, build strong and healthy community members, and decrease recidivism. These are a few simple ideas, but there are literally millions of other constructive, progressive ways that we could repurpose this money. Expanding prison facilities is not and will never be the answer.
We are all affected. We are all connected. Santangelo Williams, Ithaca, New York. I wrote a little something to say. The bar is beyond us. They set the bar and then barred us from breaking the mold. Though their standard is gold, education over enslavement. This year marks the year that my father has been incarcerated more years than I've seen him outside of the cage. I was gonna do some rhyming stuff, but I feel like I have to speak from a personal experience. Seeing my father in jail for providing for my family the only way he could really affected me as a human being. Seeing rigor mortis set into my living father as he sat behind bars, getting graying at the age of 35, affects me. Seeing the countless number of families looking across on Christmas, having to spend hours being searched and checked just to see their spouse, their father, their mother, behind a glass, not even be able to touch them, affects me. The idea of expanding on this, instead of expanding on the education of a people and the prosperity of a people, affects me. It affects all of us. When you put money into something, that shows what your value is. Putting money into this jail system is showing where our value is. We cannot show our value in this. I don't know what to say, but just please take into account that I am a real person affected by the decisions of others, and I hope that the decision made here tonight or whenever the decision is made will be one that's positive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
I have Marjo. From Ithaca, M-A-R-J-O. Oh, Mario, I'm sorry. Mario, you already spoke.
Yeah, but I spoke for like support. That,
you already spoke.
Yeah, so I wanted to say very quickly that I urge you to vote. Okay. To urge you to vote in favor of the moratorium.
And Andy Doyle,
the students have said it all. I'm just wanted to tell you that we, the people, as you have seen again and again and again, we are not going away and we'll keep on fighting until we'll win. Thank you.
Andy Doyle.
I'm Andy Doyle, and I just want to first of all say that I totally appreciate the legislators who have thought very carefully over this issue. It's not a simple issue. It's very complicated. I was very surprised a few weeks ago to see that it had almost unanimously, except for one person who wasn't there, been approved, and which made me think. I know some of the people personally here, and I know they've been on the front lines of human rights, and many maybe are more concerned about people in jail than I am. But I felt that, you know, weighing all these things, and I did spend days looking at reading everything I could on this subject, that I would stand with the people who at least want this moratorium. For one thing, one little point, I don't want to bring up the whole jail situation, which is massive and horrible, but the one point I do wish to bring up is immigrants, migrants. Migrants have recently been cracked down on and the county jails have been used in the state. I know in Canandaigua, for example, they board for the... for ICE and the Border Patrol, they board people at these facilities. Now, so at the very least, by boarding out a prisoner, you're taking up a cell, which won't be taken by some migrant. And the migrants aren't, you know, they aren't people who have committed any crimes. In fact, we just got our little Amnesty International group here in Ithaca was just able to get a person from the Democratic Republic of the Congo that, you know, the horrible things that are going on there. Well, an asylum seeker has been almost 2 years, 22 months he's been in custody in a jail situation just like we're talking about. And we finally were able to, by, you know, pro bono lawyers and our amnesty group working and guaranteeing his housing and everything, we're able to get him out into the community. He's a wonderful person in our community now, Amboise. So I'm just saying that that's that little personal victory of getting a person out of jail meant so much to me. And I hope that we'll all do something that could, you know, positively affect prisoners and people who are incarcerated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we have Natalie Nestradini.
Sure, we'll go with that. Yeah, I mean, you guys are so bored with us, aren't you? Everyone's just kind of checking their nails and their phones. through this meeting, I'm sort of wondering who you are and who you represent, because this is the worst public comment I have ever seen. I mean, are you part of the public? Do you represent the public? Do you represent that guy you just shut down? Yeah, anyway, that's unimportant, because I'm actually here to talk to the public. I want to thank everyone for coming out today. You guys are beautiful. You're amazing. I want to talk to you about this situation, because it isn't working. We've been packing the hall since November. It's been a good experience, but the problem is that the discussion is arrested. We keep asking the same questions. We still don't know how much this costs.
Please address the legislature.
Phase two? We don't know what the yearly maintenance cost is. And our questions are inadequately addressed. So I just want to talk to the public here today and discuss ways of moving forward. We've already started a really wonderful process. The fact that it's more and different people each time, the fact that you can go to Green Star and you can hear people talking about what's going on, the fact that people in New York City are reading our articles, the fact that it's in academia in a bigger way, this is really important. You guys are doing beautiful work. And we have so much more work to do, because these people are so alienated from the public they purport to represent, we have to pick up the slack, all right? We're going to be doing a bit more community organizing. What you can do today is everyone, go home, talk to your people, talk to your family, talk to your friends, anyone who you share interests and political commitments with, that's the starting point. Next up, we're going to be doing a bit more of the door-to-door organizing to access folks who, you know, are a bit ahead of us and that they don't have faith in this space. Yeah, so that's it. Y'all are beautiful, and I'm going to see a lot more of you, okay?
Marianne Grady Flores, please.
Hello. It's really great to see so many folks here. Greetings to all of you on the county legislature that I know. I just wanted to share that some of you may know that I just got out of jail this past Friday. And I wanted to qualify and say that I was in with six other white women and six other white men. No, except five. And James Ricks, who is African-American elder from Ithaca. And we were in for protesting drones, which many of you may be aware of. And the issue of drones is a part of the triplet that Martin Luther King always talked about, the militarism, the poverty, and the racism. So being in prison, or in the jail, I should say, and it was in the Syracuse jail, and I understand that there is a difference, It was an eye-opener for me. I've been in that particular jail before, and I've been in other jails before, but I haven't spent the time that some of my other family members have. I know that the taste that I had of it was buffered because I am white and I'm older. I was considered an elder. So there was a tad bit more respect given to me. But the taste of what could drive one crazy, especially when you're in a holding pattern, waiting for sentencing and not knowing whether you're going to be sent out to a rehab, waiting for a bed somewhere to be treated. The money's, there is so many millions of ways, and you people, I know you've heard it, I don't want to be redundant, but just the taste in the jail. We were there when there was the sub-zero weather, and we were freezing in the cells. The last meal we got was at 5 o'clock. We didn't eat again until the next morning, and it was way lacking in calories and in protein. I was quite shocked to see how many people came out of the cells from the pod that I was on to get the meds because people can't go to sleep. And I'm not talking about just not being able to sleep in the cells, which for me was quite hard because your eyeballs are pierced with these LED flashlights and guards coming in your cell to make sure you didn't commit suicide every hour. I had one guard, I heard her snickering, saying, I'm going to protect myself from the protesters. You know, there's a dehumanizing element that you people are probably very well aware of that happens to the people that are forced to be in the positions of taking those kinds of jobs as well as to the prisoners. The thing that I have to say that I came away with was the gratitude of the love that I felt of the women in the cell, in the pod, and that humanity is going to overcome no matter how much the structures try to keep us down. Humanity's going to win, and I ask all of you to support the moratorium and get creative. I think about BJM.
Can you please sum up?
Yes, my son, one of my sons, I have four kids, one of my sons was hired to be the chef for the cutting up of the fruit and vegetable program at BJM. So the kids could get a little taste of some fresh stuff that's locally grown. That program is hanging by a thread. The kids only get to eat fresh stuff once a week now. That's just one tiny little example of what our $1 million can go to. So thank you.
Next. I believe it's Agel, A-J-L.
Say it again, Mike.
Is it Mox Agel?
Yeah,
Isle. Isle, I'm sorry. Isle.
Yeah, it can be difficult to pronounce. It's okay. So I was going to say something about how mass incarceration is barbaric, but a lot of people in the room have family members who are in jail and have already told you how mass incarceration is barbaric. And we have people in the community who have already told you about how vital community resources are being underfunded. And I could talk about how I read in the paper last week about how the food banks are running out of food because they don't have enough resources. And so we can talk about all these things, and we can talk about the fact that what money is being found for is to increase the county jail capacity. And I wonder what the point is of this. And I wonder why exactly we need to be sending our tax money to put people in jail. And because I don't want to attack any individuals here, we can say that there's an institutional problem, as we've heard about repeatedly throughout the evening, about the way that the law enforcement in this community acts. And do I trust these people to put people in jail for good reason? No, I do not. And I don't think anyone else in the room, after hearing today's presentation about which I will not name specifics because I wish to follow the directives of the man up there. So I won't name any specifics, Your Honor. But we understand that there is a fundamentally corrupt system here and that it is not putting people in prison in responsible ways and that you cannot put people in prison in responsible ways. So I'm being asked why, or I'm asking myself, why we need to put $1 million that's on the budget, plus who knows how much that's not going to be on the budget, into increasing a system that's incapable of working in its very constitution. And that is the question, and I think there's an opportunity for an answer from all of you who have been listening patiently to all of us offer all these reasons for why the jail expansion should not go forward. For that reason, I do really hope that all of you who have been listening very patiently to the community come out here and offer all of our complaints, can take those complaints in hand and vote in the responsible way with the voice of the community, which has come out in force, to ask you, please, to put the moratorium in place for this jail expansion and hopefully go on to table it permanently, because it is not what the community wants, it is not what the community needs, and it is not what is good for the community. Thank you.
Claire Grady, then Jamie Hendricks.
Is this on? So, is there a clock?
Is there a what?
Clock.
A lock?
Yes.
Clock.
So, yeah.
Up there.
My name is Claire Grady, and I'm here to say yes to the moratorium on jail expansion. I want to thank Leslyn for putting that forward tonight and all legislators who are going to support that. And I'm here to thank the grassroots movement that's brought that to the top of the table for so many of us, more and more and more of us. And I would echo Natalie to say that you are beautiful. Thank you for being here. And thank you, Dubian, for your poem. Where are you?
He just left.
He just left. So, the part of the conversation that we're right now is talking about alternatives to incarceration. But it feels really important to note that in alternatives to incarceration are talking about people who are already in the system. And it feels really important to say that the system, I think it's irrefutable evidence now, from the get-go, has legalized the criminal behavior of the government and criminalized human beings for being poor and being people of color. That is from the get-go. And I'm not done saying that. I'm not done saying that. So that when we kill people as a matter of policy routinely, that is given a bonus. And when we steal billions and trillions from our children and our children's future, that's also given a bonus. And yet our jails are filled with people who are on the receiving end of that criminality. So I'm going to continue to say that and put that in perspective for myself. So here we are looking at alternatives to incarceration. It seems really important at this moment to not just look at what do we do when people are faced, grew up in a landscape that's already inequitable, that some people's children, before they're even born, as one mother said to me, she looked me right in the eyes, a black woman said, I have two sons. They built their jail cells before my sons were even born, is how she said it to me. So that why is it that some people have a higher risk of not only being jailed, but not having education, not having jobs, not having what it is to have well-being? Why is it that we can predict that before people are even born? So those are systemic things, and people in this room are about their life's work to change that system. And I thank you, and let's give each other energy for that. But I want to bring us right here, right now, to February of 2014. 4 years ago, here in our town, we experienced the fatal shooting of fellow Ithacan Sean Greenwood. Sean Greenwood grew up in Ithaca.
Can you conclude, please? Sum up.
Sorry?
Your time is up. Can you sum up?
I would ask if someone else has 3 minutes that they could give me, because this is actually really key. Somebody, this man here is giving me 3 minutes.
May you state your name, sir, please?
Thank you. Sean Greenwood grew up in this landscape of Ithaca. As a black man, his choices were limited. Sean Greenwood, even in his death, experienced the racism of this system. He was denied his humanity by being called by the police and then the Ithaca Journal and then every reputable source, a drug dealer, who basically brought about his own death. I want to ask how many people in this room even questioned the story that was given by the police and the Ithaca Journal about the details of his killing. How many people questioned them and looked into the matter for themselves to find out the truth of the killing of Sean Greenwood? Okay, we have work to do and we can help each other with that work. The truth was kept out. One of the key witnesses who was right there within feet of Sean's killing said that officer who was said to be in front of the van was never in front of the van. Okay, that's one witness, but her testimony was left out of the public document. Her testimony was left out. And who knows if that was even shared. Well, we know, can quite guess that that was not shared with the grand jury. What's really important is that 4 years ago, the community leaders of color held a forum at the Southside Community Center where people could speak to the mayor, the district attorney, and the chief of police and talk, why did Sean get killed? They brought their intelligence, their heart, their soul, their passion, and spoke to the leader, not just about Sean's case, with good questions, but with their own experience of lifetime living in Ithaca, being most at risk of being not only incarcerated, but being under lethal force. So those questions, I would say that those are the people that we stand poised to help find alternatives to their incarceration. That for me, there's a corollary between the respect we give them about undoing the system and even giving them the respect of an answer to their questions. Instead, we walked away from them and their questions. We treat them now like the subjects of our good deeds, like we are going to help you avoid incarceration. When you have just brought to us the truth of the killing of your brother, Sean Greenwood. So I say that is actually part of our work, not only to undo this system, but to provide alternatives to incarceration. And it's not just other people's incarceration, it's a collective incarceration. And thank you for that sign that says we are all affected, we are all connected. Thank you. And in memory of Sean Greenwood, I just say, let's continue this work.
Thank you. Jamie Hendricks, please.
The memorial for Sean Greenwood is on Sunday at 4:30. The Amy Zion Church.
Yeah. Jamie Hendricks from Trumansburg. So whatever your impression may be of us, and there are a variety of impressions, there is one thing I can assure you. We're actually organized and we have a plan. And that plan is becoming richer and more detailed every day, that we make new connections, and we find new people with useful information. So basically what we're asking is that you give us an opportunity just to show you that we have a plan and that we're really serious about reducing the number of people in jail. It's not just about stopping an expansion. It's really about reducing the number so that you don't, or we don't, have to worry about the state forcing a bigger jail on us. Just, I've met with many of you individually, just with Joey Cardamon and other people, and we understand that you thought you had really good reasons to do this renovation / expansion, specifically to avoid building a bigger jail. And basically what we as a community collectively are saying is, let's be creative, let's think outside the box, let's stop listening to the state telling us what to do. Since we are the ones who have to pay for it, let's just decide how we are going to spend our dollars And we are going to bring, I mean, deal with this issue of the variances, because I understand as a practical decision that you're afraid the variances will be pulled and that you have to pay more on outboarding. So what we are here as a group trying to show to you is like we will, pull together our collective intelligence to go and talk with the State Commission of Corrections and say them, don't do this trick of reducing the variance and don't come and tell us we need a bigger jail. Because we want Tompkins County to be the leader that is a reputation that he has now because of decisions that you all made in the past. That's basically what you're asking you, to continue that tradition of being a leader in innovative thinking about alternatives to incarceration and show it to all the New York State counties that are struggling with this issue. And to just like a final comment, I was in the county attorney's office this afternoon talking about how to get access to the jail data. And I was told, and I kind of figured that out by looking at other counties, many of the people in jail are young people and they have like DWI issues. I mean, they're drinking while intoxicated or drug issues. So is that not a sad state of affairs that our young people that have difficulty with impulse control, that we send them to jail? So now see all these beautiful people here. I mean, they for some reason are not part of that segment that has been sent to jail. And so I ask you to think about your children or your nieces and nephew, and if they happen to have an ill impulse control problem, whether you want them to be sent to jail to get like some treatment, whether you would not prefer that there are other mechanisms used. Thank you.
Thank you. Katie Cox and then Lisa Ellen. Katie Cox.
Hi, my name is Katie Cox. I guess I'm here to talk today about the human impacts of incarceration. I personally and my family have 7 family members who have been incarcerated from between a year and 7 years, and some multiple times, 3 of which have college degrees at this point, still cannot find employment. One is a Vietnam vet, and I guess my issue is that all of these were nonviolent offenses and have such a long-term effect on people's lives that I wish we could take a year in Ithaca where we have the ability to make changes and really use that $1 million to have a different impact on people's lives. I'd also like to say that I'm a homeowner here, and from a taxpayer's perspective, I'm not happy about my money going towards that. And I guess I'd just really like people to take the time to think about the human impact and the long-term impact of incarceration for families. Because you might do a year in jail, it can have lasting effects for the rest of your life, and I think we can do better. So thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Ellen. Do we have Lisa Ellen?
Hi, my name is Lisa, and I actually just moved to Ithaca about 6 months ago. I moved to this progressive community with my husband, who is a new dean at Cornell, and I have to tell you, I'm really disappointed. I am really disappointed. Do you know that the rest of the country is downsizing prisons and jails right now? Like, that's what's happening. And I'm very interested in this topic because I'll tell you, for about 15 years, I've been running a very successful $1 million a year IT staffing company in New Jersey and New York and in D.C. But about 7 years ago, I started volunteering inside jails and inside prisons. And in several states, actually, in Virginia, in New Jersey, in New York, I'm now actually at Cayuga Correctional Facility. And I've stopped running my business. I've quit the business. Not sure my husband's that crazy about that, but I have. And I've gone back to school for criminal justice. And I guess over the years, I've gotten to know these men who are incarcerated. And I give you guys sitting here a lot more credit than maybe other people who've spoken up here, because I don't know how many of you have actually been inside. Most people haven't. And even if you walk inside, it's a tour. Go inside and spend some time and talk to people and teach a class or just get to know who's in there. And you will find that most of the men are parents. They are parents. And the thing that we have in common with them is that they love their children. We can spend hours. And today, as a matter of fact, I was at Cayuga, which is the medium security prison. We talk for hours about parenting and how to be a better father. And I'm like, guys, I have an agenda here. We have to get to this stuff. They want to know how to do it better. They want to know. They want to change it. We're never going to get there if we don't address these issues. Some of the guys in my class have been incarcerated for 20 years or more for nonviolent offenses. It's a waste. These guys are bright. They have so much to offer. It sickens me, actually. We need a year to figure out what to do. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about this. This is Ithaca. I was sold a bill of goods. The country is watching us. The country's watching. We have an opportunity. What am I going to tell all my friends? I'm here. I'm at Cayuga. And guess what? We're building more things. You guys are... It's just not where the rest of the world is going. And I don't want to be embarrassed. I quit a really, really, really good business to spend my life trying to make people's lives better. This isn't going to help. I know it's only 7 beds. But let's spend it on education. Let's do something. But just give us a year to figure this out. And I invite all of you to go inside and just get to meet some of these guys. And you'll see they're not that different from us. So thank you.
Thank you. That's all the blue cards I have people signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to address the legislature? Could you come to the microphone and please state your name and your municipality, please? Just hand it in, but go ahead and speak.
This mic or over here?
That's fine right there. Just your name and your municipality, please.
My name is Theo Sheriff, and I reside within Tompkins County. Is that the municipality we're
looking
for?
That's fine.
Okay. We get caught up sometimes in what's directly affecting us. The problem with legislating these sorts of things is, like many speakers have already said, who's making the decisions and how much experience on the inside is there? I would like to, and I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm curious how many people in the legislature have family, friends who have had to go through this system. Some of us definitely do. This is a very important issue to a lot of people, particularly people without any specific privilege behind them. 5% of the human population on Earth resides within the borders of the United States. Pardon me. Citizens of the United States. The United States imprisons 25% of the imprisoned population on Earth. On Earth. Currently today, 1 in 100 adults in America are somewhere within the system, incarcerated. 1 in 100. It's about 1 in 9 if you're black. And close to the same if you're Hispanic. But yeah, even white people, 1 in 100, are incarcerated in the United States. And the reason is we have the largest for-profit prison system ever known to man. Let's call this what it is. We have lost our way as a nation, and we can make an impact here on the county level. And shouldn't we? Who's it up to? Who's going to make the difference? Who's going to make the change? Who's going to stand up and say enough is enough? How do you define the term? And forgive me if it sounds a bit hyperbolic, but I'm sincere. How do you define the term police state? 1 in 100 Americans are currently incarcerated, and this is unacceptable. Never before in the history, in the written history of the human species, has any nation imprisoned so many of its own people. And we do it because, well, usually people who make these decisions, may I wrap up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Usually people making these decisions have no firsthand experience. And it's understandable when you take a step back that business is a big factor in our society and in our economy. But let us never lose our values when it comes between a choice of for-profit prison systems, which we can make an impact on locally, and human rights, because that's what this is about. This is an issue of human rights against business. I want to go on, but
thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak tonight, address the legislature? Thank you. Yes, sir. State your name and your municipality, please.
Certainly. My name is Neil Uli, and I live in the city of Ithaca.
Thank you.
One of the things that I've gotten out of discussion I've had with people about this upcoming vote is that we're told that the decision is being pushed on us by New York State. So my question is to the legislators, have any of you personally verified what the policies and the rules are from New York State and talked to the people who are pushing these decisions upon us? And have we looked at why they're doing this? Is it a matter of really wanting something better for our people, or has it come down to a matter of who the money flows through? What the status is of the people that are making these decisions and pushing the decisions on us from New York State as compared to the status of the people that are in the jails? How are these decisions being made and why? And what do we want? What do we want for our children and our grandchildren? When somebody makes a mistake, and we all make mistakes in life, some of those mistakes wind up having consequences that we look back on and say, why did that happen? Why did this person wind up in jail for doing something that someone else did the same thing and nothing happens to them? Why did that happen? What are the alternatives? What choices do we have? Could we send someone to make restitution some other way besides putting them in a cage? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Thank you all for coming. I'm sorry, I see a hand up. Go ahead.
So today I have witnessed...
Can I have your name and your municipality, please?
Carolina Grunberg, and I'm from Ithaca, New York. And I also agree. On a larger note, I was an immigrant. I was a refugee, and I came to this country being told that it is a country of good and that I was going to, you know, get help and the streets are paved with gold. That's what was instilled in my brain. And for a long time, I believed it. And I stand here now looking at these people, looking at tears. Are you seeing the tears in these people's eyes? Are you connected to the trauma that these people are feeling? I had a full speech written out about restorative justice, but I want to take the rest of my time in a moment of silence. And I want you all to look around and see the people. Because I'm absolutely appalled by the fact that these people are being interrupted. We are not being treated like human beings in this very room. We're not allowed to speak. Our voices are shut down. And that is a fundamental problem that is so connected, and it's outrageous. And on that note, I want you to think that your daughters, your sons, could be pulled over for a DWI, could have an accident, and could end up in those prisons. You are us. We are all connected, and as these people have said, we are all affected. And until you step down from your power and see these people as humans and yourselves as humans, we will not make any type of change. And that is why I think the moratorium is really important, because we need to connect as humans, all of us. And if so, when you make your decision, please just look at the fact that we're in a room with people that are desperate and crying and searching for their voices. That's all I want. Humanity, thank you. And I want to also talk to the people and thank everyone for being here, because every voice that I've heard, I've acknowledged, and we need to come together. And I believe with Natalie, this is our struggle, our fight, and we need to come together. And if these people want to join, they can. I'm not attacking, but we need to take fucking action for ourselves. Thank you.
I don't see anyone else. Then we're going to move on. Thank you all for coming and speaking to us. I would point out that we have spent an hour and 45 minutes listening to folks tonight. I think that is being pretty open-minded to listening to our constituents.
See how you vote.
Mike.
The vote will matter.
Mike.
Privilege of floor is over.
Mike. I have a quick clarification question.
Go ahead.
So this is on public broadcast. When do they have to switch the tapes to make sure that broadcast isn't interrupted mid-sentence or something?
We normally break at 7:30.
How long does that take to change the tapes?
I'm not sure. I don't think it takes very long, if at all.
All right. I just want to be mindful of that, so it's not.
All right. We have a lot of folks here tonight about a particular issue. I'd like to reorder tonight so that those folks can hear us talk about the issue that I believe they're here about.
I think that we also have staff here for certain issues, so we've paid 2 hours.
I understand that.
Yeah, on other issues. Thanks.
I'm going to move to individual member filed resolutions, and there's a resolution by Leslyn McBean Claiborne. And Leslyn, would you like to introduce your resolution?
Thank you, Chair. Resolution ID number 4651, authorizing a one-year moratorium on the jail expansion renovation project. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Oh, I'm sorry, Dooley Kiefer. I didn't see which hand was up over there.
Thank you.
Would you like to speak to it, Leslie?
I'd like
resolution.
To speak to it very briefly, but also allow my colleagues time to do so. I'm bringing this resolution forward. I had this conversation a while ago, just brainstorming briefly with our county administrator about, what are some things we can do. I appreciate the community coming forward as well. And one of the things that was rolling around through public safety, through on the Brian's leadership with the county administrator, is the formation of the ad hoc group to think about, to study, to look into the whole issue of additional alternatives to incarceration. I'm very proud of what we have done in Tompkins County as a body relative to alternatives to incarceration. we have indeed been a leader in that arena. We heard from the public that there are perhaps more areas that we can look at. I heard Caroline, I think it was just a moment ago, talk about restorative justice, and many of the people around this table, I don't want anybody out there to get it twisted, have been involved and at the forefront of restorative justice issues here in Tompkins County. Many of the people here, when this decision got made, somebody mentioned human rights as a human rights issue, have thought about the human rights of the many people that we board out because of the lack of space. And partly what fueled our decision as we thought about this project. But when we decided that we wanted to take the opportunity to listen to our public and say, let's look into what else we can be doing, if there are other things, I mean, certainly we thought that we have been on the cutting edge of alternatives to incarceration options way beyond when other counties were doing this. But others said there's perhaps more that we could do and we haven't looked into. So as that evolved, I thought we needed to, and we heard from the public as well, we should take the time to let this group do the work that we've asked them to do. That is my main reason behind this, asking for this moratorium. Let's see what comes out of it. Perhaps there is something or things, other things, that we can be doing that would allow us to reduce our jail population. Now, I'm only asking for 1 year moratorium, and I want this to be very clear. Okay? I've said this to some of the Stop Jail Expansion folks, and those of you who know me know that I'm very plain spoken. Okay? I am not anti-jail. I've been very clear about that. I said to some folks, I have a 7-year-old daughter. If somebody does something egregious to her, I want them locked up. Let me be clear about that. Okay? Either lock them up or you're going to have to lock me up because I'm going after them. Okay? Period. Okay? If people are committing violent crimes, you know, I think there's a place for jail. I don't want people who are committing frivolous things like peeing in somebody's bush or garden to be locked up. I do want us to study this. We have talked about, I can't say peeing on.
No.
Oh, okay.
I hear from a lot of people who are very upset.
Please let us continue.
We have talked about 10-year study that we've done about the jail population, and you know, it's time for us to do that. Let's just do it. We said we will. And so I'm bringing this to say, let's allow that group that we have formed to do that work and come back to us and see what there is, what else we can be doing. Okay. There may not be anything, and we may end up in the same place as saying we have to add those spaces, because we are not about boarding people out and taking them away from services and family and everything else. Okay. That's why I'm bringing this resolution. I have no ulterior motives behind this except to allow the group to do the work that we say we're going to do, allow us to get those results and see where it goes from there. That's all that I will say on this. And I have some other responses to some things people said when the opportunity presents itself.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Mike. And thanks, Leslyn, for bringing this, and especially thanks to the public for coming. I think if anybody has any questions about our moving into these chambers and how we've used this space, I think you've answered it tonight. This is what this room is for, and I'm very glad that we're here and we'll be able to make a space that's comfortable for you. I'm not going to talk on the merits very much about right now. I may reserve time, you know, a shot for a second bite at the end of this. I just have to, say a couple of things quickly. As Leslyn said, we've done many things. This county has been a leader, absolutely a leader statewide in resisting jail expansion. And we talked about this at length, maybe it was back in November, when at a previous meeting, and most of you weren't there. And I don't think most of you were there in 2004 and 5 when we did resist the state's requirement mandate that we build a far larger jail. But there are just a couple things I wanted to mention. Resolution A tonight, we're accepting a grant. And this isn't just the legislature's policy and idea that we do these things to find every possible way to help people avoid being in the system at all. It's our staff at all levels. So that the assigned counsel program, those are the people who assign attorneys to people who can't afford them to defend themselves, a very small staff. They worked and got a grant for, and I'm going to read this a little bit because it's on consent agenda. It's not going to be talked about much. They got a grant, and our motion is to accept the award tonight, a three-year grant for a total of $105,000, 3 years at $35,000, for a contract with Center for Community Alternatives in Syracuse, working in conjunction with defense counsel to provide defender-based sentencing advocacy to defendants, a program we've been trying to get going here, and we've been able, our staff took the initiative, found out where they could find funding, found the right agency to work with, and got the money. So this stuff happens at many, many levels across our county government. I would point out, I don't know who said it, but we are not cutting mental health services. In fact, we've been replacing positions that we had previously cut during the fiscal crisis. We were trying desperately not to raise taxes in the middle of a recession. We've replaced, in fact, those are a couple of the positions that we replaced first when we found we were in a little bit better fiscal position and we were able to put some more money back. There was one position filled that had gone unfilled for a long time and another position added in mental health. I've been personally in your position many times, pleading with whoever it was, whether state, federal, whatever, county, before I got on this board, I was in your position, coming to the microphone. Please do this or that or the other that we had organized about, that we'd educated ourselves on. It's really important to get your facts right if you want to influence the people who actually have the position of making a decision, whether it's here or Albany or your local town or Washington, D.C. I would just ask you to take the time to get your facts right.
Thanks for teaching us.
Thanks. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I also wanted to thank the people who've come. It's very empowering, I know, to get involved in something at this level of detail and to hang with it as long as you have, and to start to learn about it. And it makes a difference, and it makes a difference to us that you're out there. So I thank you for being there. Our ATI programs were hard fought. They were really, it was really just before the time that I came on the legislature, but they were still hard fought in each of my first few years on the legislature. As I understand it, they were never meant to be static. They were meant to be dynamic, and I think we haven't been pushed hard enough in recent years to make sure that we keep them static and keep staying on the cutting edge as we did. You know, there was a point that we were on that. I beg you to do more work. I'm also one of those people, you know, some of you know me from many causes that I've been out there on the front lines of, and
the places where I feel like I've been able to make the biggest difference are those where, yes, I came and spent hours in front of microphones, but yes, we also divvied up the work, figured out exactly what to study, exactly how the programs work, and came back with very specific suggestions about the kinds of things that could be tried that maybe haven't been tried here.
For doing this?
Excuse me.
This is my turn.
Please let...
Get him out of
here. I'm going to ask you to leave, sir. I would like to have you leave this meeting now.
When we came here to give you the statistics, 60% of the prisoners in the county jail,
please, sir,
expecting trial or are expect to be sentenced.
You have no idea what harm you're doing to your own cause.
You had your chance. Allow them to finish.
Carol.
So the kinds of things that I was able to do at local levels in, you know, 20 years ago, and now at state levels, is study this kind of thing. Figure out the right questions to ask, which I think you've started to do, and to understand exactly what it was we've tried and where it is that we can best be pushed. It's disturbing to us to have people come to us who don't take the trouble to understand what are the things that we have actually tried and who yell at us when we try to respond. The 2 hours we've just spent and that we will continue to spend here is time that I would really like to see us delving more deeply into, you know, how come we haven't done more on community transitions? That's something I'd really like to see. And I'd like to see a viable plan about how either the programs that we've got going already or a newly started program. And I'd like to see our legislature make a commitment, and I don't know that tonight is the right time to do it. I think the time to do it is when we move forward with what I'm going to talk about next. But see us make a commitment to spend, we can't spend a certain amount, specific amount of money until we have a program designed, but to get a sense of the body when we do move forward on how we will make our own jail more humane for those who are there now and aren't going to be gone in the next few months. I'd like to know, to have a sense of the body that we also intend to move forward with some of these other things that where we pat ourselves on the back for having done a lot, but maybe we haven't done as much as we could. I have been in our jail, and I am one of the people who came in expecting Tompkins County to have a place that is more humane, that does more to let people see how can I get to a place in my life where I can come out and show that I can have a job and get off of the drugs that I'm on and have access to a computer to start looking for that job for when I get out, have a place to get some exercise. I know people who've had to go an hour away from their families because we don't have space here. And humanitarian reasons, as we've talked about here before, I don't feel that I in good conscience can let that continue. But that doesn't mean that I'm dismissing the arguments that you're bringing. I share the sense that we have come to a society, to a place in America that is untenable. That we can't continue to allow. It just seems like this kind of dialogue is the place we should start. I'm glad we started there, 6 months ago? But I'd like to see us get further than we have in the use of our time and the the depth of the materials that we get to go into together. So that's where I'd like to see this go, you know, rather than an either-or. I don't see this as either-or. I think we've got to do both. I think we've got to make our own situation physically for the people who are in our jail today more humanitarian, and we have to make sure that we put in place all of the kinds of things we need to put in place so that we don't feed into a system that continues to put people there who shouldn't be there.
Peter Stein.
Yes, I'll try to be brief. I think that let me just say a few words about myself and my own perspective. I think there's no one around this table who's more committed to Alternatives for Incarceration program than I am. I have argued for the OAR. I've been a part of OAR. I take part in their programs. I've worked with the ABIR group. I've lobbied for more funds for probation, for OAR, because I believe that it's no good for a person to be in jail, and that the more kinds of programs that we can devise to keep them out of it are a good thing. I think those are some of the people, namely the people who need our help, that we ought to be trying to help. And I myself will do as much as I can. That being said, I must tell you, number one, I think you have made, you being the people that have argued, that have talked to us on many occasions, have had a big impact. And believe me, the impact is that we're going to go and make a study to see if, in fact, there are other
alternatives to incarceration.
Huh?
ATI program.
Yeah, alternatives to incarceration programs that we might be doing. We did this same thing, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. But I think it's time for another look. And I think had you not come in here and made the speeches that you did, we probably would not have done it this year, and perhaps we wouldn't even have done it in the next 5 years. But we are going to do it. And I think you've made a significant accomplishment by doing that. And I'd like you to believe that the people who are going to work on that will work on it with enthusiasm and honestly, and will try to make programs that will take some number of people out of jail that are now in there. That being said, you have not convinced me that there's anything wrong with our building these 7 new beds. The arguments you've made are very general types of arguments, which nobody that I know argues with, that it's disgraceful that 1% of Americans are in jail, but I don't know what to do about it. But what I know is, I'm speaking. Please let me speak. I do not think that doing what you're suggesting makes any difference whatsoever. It has a zero impact on the number of people that are in jail, because all we're doing is building beds so that people who are incarcerated Ithacans or Tompkins County residents who are incarcerated and are now incarcerated in distant locations where they can't see their loved ones, they're going to be moved back to Tompkins County. That's the only thing that's going to happen. And it will, if we build this expansion, it will not increase by one person the number of individuals who are incarcerated. That's what I believe.
Peter, are you done?
I'm almost done, Mike.
Ladies, would you please let these folks speak? There are a lot of people here. You've had your opportunity to speak. It's our opportunity to talk now.
I'm just telling you that I've heard what you said, and I believe that building this expansion will be good for the people who are in jail, not bad for it. And so for that reason, I intend to vote against the moratorium.
Dooley Kiefer.
Recess.
Please do.
I'm sorry, what other hands were there?
What's the speaking order, Mike, after Dooley?
I'm sorry, did I get out of order?
No, you didn't. I just want to know.
I've got Jim Dennis, then Nathan, then Brian, and then Mike Sigler. Dooley's first.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the varied input we've heard tonight and on previous nights. I guess I will start by saying that I think the prison industrial complex is an abomination. But I also need to say that we do not have a for-profit prison here. We have a little county jail, and it is not in particularly good shape. We have variances for double bunking, as you all know and have pointed out. I don't find double bunking ideal. I think single beds are preferable. The plan to add 7 single beds is prudent whether we keep the variances or not, because they can be used. They can be used for local people who will be in jail for one reason or another. It's the reasons they're in jail that trouble me, not the fact that we have to have a jail and we should make it as tolerable as we can for our residents when they're there. I am not prepared to vote for the project until I have seen a much more detailed presentation of what the plans are and what the costs are, and I'm waiting for that information. So I wish that this resolution were not before us tonight, because I think it comes to me in the wrong order. So I will not be supporting the resolution, although I seconded it tonight. I seconded it for several reasons, one being that ordinarily we would have legislative privilege of the floor right after the public, which would give us an opportunity, if we chose, to comment on what we've heard. But that was not what was happening. Mike changed our agenda, so only by voting to put this resolution on the floor would we be discussing it. We have not actually voted to add it to the agenda, but we're talking about it, and that's
I can speak that we do not have to vote to add it to the agenda.
Okay, thank you, Mike. With respect to the $1 million that has been mentioned tonight repeatedly, the estimate that I have heard is under $1 million. I'm not prone to round numbers up. If I don't have to spend that much money, I wouldn't. So it's under $1 million. But it's not as though we have $1 million sitting there in hand to spend on whatever we want. We don't. This project, were it to go forward, would be bonded. Maybe our finance director would like to explain that we don't have this money sitting here to spend on anything we want. All of the items that I've heard mentioned, which have to do with reintroducing people to the community so they can be successful and not return to jail, with, that is a summary statement of where I think we need to spend more money. Those are things that we will, I hope, have good plans coming forth from the CJATI task force. I hope some of you all will apply to be public members on that task force. I guess not unlike my colleague Peter, have each year moved to put more money for OAR in our budget, and that doesn't happen. Maybe by having heard from you all, we will be more prone to give OAR that money in subsequent years. I think that's something else we could do sooner rather than later. But tonight, the vote on this resolution does not mean that you haven't been heard. It means that I, for one, am not convinced to vote for a year's moratorium at this meeting. I need to see the project in more detail, which is what I think some of you would like to see too, and make up my mind probably a month from now. So don't despair, and thank you for coming.
Before I go to Jim Dennis, I'm going to ask our county administrator, Joe Mariana, could you tell us where the proposed project plans stand at this point?
They are nearing completion. In fact, I think they'll be done over the next couple of days. So it's my plan, and I think this is consistent with the timing that we had talked about in the fall, when this issue first arose, is my plan to bring a bonding resolution to the legislature in the March meeting cycle. So it's my expectation that we will have fully completed designs and budgets well in time for committee consideration of the bonding in March.
Thank you. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I just want to say a couple things. Part of my responsibility as a county legislator is to listen to the public, and I have this evening, and I appreciate what many people said. I do not appreciate shouting, unruly behavior, interrupting others, those kinds of things. As a former teacher, I would have asked you to go to the timeout chair, or in the new parlance, the thinking chair. Absolutely.
You get time after that?
Listen, this is our time to speak. Stop.
I will
recess the meeting, and we will stop. But we're trying to get this through because you folks are interested in this issue. I've tried to move it up so you folks don't have to stay here till midnight. I think it ought to let the people talk. Jim Dennis.
Let me just make a couple of other government comments. The year 2008 and 2009, local county governments have gone through the worst economic times of any local governments ever in the last 30 years. I have a couple of sheets here, and probably no one is interested in them, but we have unsentenced incarcerated population per 1,000 residents by county from 2012. There are 53 counties ahead of us. The four behind us are Hamilton, Schoharie, Saratoga, and Herkimer. Incarcerated population per 1,000 residents by county. Again, there are 53 counties ahead of us. So the reason I bring these things forward is I will not be, in case anyone is counting, supporting the moratorium. I will be supporting the results of the committee as they do their work and come back to us. We have a budget every year, and that is the point when, if new programs are going to be put forward by our departments in those areas, they would be judged along with all the other programs that we have in Tompkins County. A roughly $35 million local control. So I heard what you said. We will listen. I do not think that the moratorium would help your case at all. And we need to move forward with this.
Nathan Shinnegan.
Joe, can you talk to me about, I'm only, supportive of this project as a last resort, and we can talk about that in greater detail and what that means, and I will. But can you tell me, why is it that we have to do this project now? And I know the answer, but I think that it's important for us to talk about.
Well, the arguments that we have been talking about from the outset, I think, are still valid today. And we can talk about cost, and we can talk about the timing of a construction schedule, and we'd like to do this within a construction season. But really, the arguments that we began this conversation with remain valid today. And I think it begins with numbers. We have a jail that was built to house 75 people. That's the design capacity of this jail. Currently, our average daily population is more like 90 people. So the state has given us a variance to keep some of those people in the jail by double bunking, which means overcrowding. They've allowed us to do that. But they've also said there's a certain limit at which you can't keep people in your jail anymore. You have to board them out. And that's what we do. We board them out to other counties. It is largely, I think, a female population we board out because of the way we have to categorize our prisoners. So we have a situation right now that's both costly, I think we're concerned about that, but also, and the point's been made by many of you, it's also a humane issue. Do we really want to have folks who are incarcerated in Tompkins County, boarded in other counties where they have no access to the services that are somewhat unique to Tompkins County, and that takes them away from family and support? Let's talk about where we are right now with respect to process. And again, I'm speaking as much to people around the room as I am to people around this table. It was said that Tompkins is way behind other people, that the rest of the country is in a place that we're not, and that we've really fallen behind. I think we can argue it's taken the country this long to catch up with us in terms of alternatives to incarceration. If you look at our rate of incarceration, and Jim talked about this, it is remarkably low. It's low because we have found that ATI works, and so we've invested in it. And so because of that, the rate of incarceration in Tompkins County is extraordinarily low. Still, it exceeds the design capacity of the jail. So fortunately, we live in a community where we listen to what people say, and we take it seriously. And the reflection of that is what happened in public safety last week, which is the Public Safety Committee has agreed to create a task force that will focus on this issue for the next 6 months, really get into the details and think about what the alternatives might be, and to take a serious run at that. Now, just in putting a pencil to paper, let's assume that it is phenomenally successful, and you can define what that success rate might be. Call it 10% reduction. Call it 20% reduction. Call it 20% reduction. And I think we have to be careful about our expectations because we've already invested so much in ATIs. But let's say we could reduce our population by 20% in the jail. That brings us down to our design capacity. Just that. And what it would mean is that we could take those additional 7 beds that we're now talking about putting in the facility by moving around some things within the jail, and we could house inmates the way we were supposed to, not double bunking them, but providing some space within that facility the way it was designed. So imagine that we are remarkably successful in this task force, that we could reduce populations by that much. We could still put those beds to very good use, which is, again, why I think the arguments that we talked about to begin with remain valid. I guess the only thing that I would say, because you've given me an opportunity to talk, and I've gone well beyond answering the question you put to me, as another reflection of the commitment to alternatives, at the same time we will be bringing a bond resolution if the moratorium doesn't happen. At the same time we'll bring the resolution for the jail. We're also bringing a bond resolution for, we think, $1.5 million for one of our centerpiece ATI programs, which is day reporting, to move it into quarters that will be very functional, very modern, will potentially allow us to expand. So in terms of our investment to ATIs, it is on so many levels. I think some of the people who have been in the discussion probably don't realize the full extent of what we do, but I'd want to include that in terms of one of the most important things that we're doing right now. So, again, that was a very long answer to a short question.
And actually, Joe, so with that day reporting program that we're expanding, now we by having that day reporting program, I mean, how many people do we avoid sending to jail?
On any given day? I think on any given day it's around 15. And again, it's been the program has been limited in some ways by dollars. Again, in 2008 when we faced the crash, we had to curtail hours a bit, but we kept it going. But it's been limited to some degree by hours. It's been limited to some degree by the fact that it's in the basement of the old library. So there's only so much you can do there. So there are opportunities that will arise when we make the move.
So in that that new facility, that $1.5 million investment for day reporting. Now, day reporting, I mean, could you just describe what the structure of the day reporting
program is like? I think it's relatively unique. It is basically, it's virtually a classroom experience. So it has individuals who in many other communities would be in jail coming instead to day reporting, to come in every morning, to get into the habit of showing up every morning on time. GED programs are there. There's some job training there. So there's a variety of things that happen within the day reporting center. Again, I think it's relatively unique to Tompkins County.
So, Joe, now with the variance that the state has given us, you know, I've been on the county board now for like 8 years, right? And I find that when it comes to incarceration issues, whether it's a Democratic or a Republican governor, they still are, I don't believe, right on the issue. And very much of this is very much on the whim of the Commissioner of Corrections and the Governor. And so right now the state's giving us a variance to have 90 inmates instead of 75, right?
The total variance allows 93, but then they have classification limits and things, so the practical capacity is now about 85.
And so now, and if the commissioner of corrections or the governor changes or the commissioner of corrections changes, and they decide, which they can, right, almost unilaterally, right? I mean, to eliminate the variance, you know, then there's the potential that we could board out upwards of what 17 or 18 people then.
Yes.
And what would the cost impact be onto the county?
I can't do the arithmetic in my head quickly enough, but it's $30,000 per person per year. So it's 17 times 30,000, whatever that might be. It's a very large number. And to your point, it's happening right now in Cortland County, where the state has revoked a variance. And in response to that, the county is going to have to build a dorm or create a dorm that will house, I think, an extra 34 inmates there. So it's not theoretical. It's happening all around us.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I know I'm going to say that I can't stand it when people say something in one direction and then say they're going to do, and then they say but, and then they vote the other way. So I'm just going to be very clear that I'm not going to support the moratorium. But and so with that said, now let me talk about this. You know, is that I guess, you know, over these 8 years, it's been really frustrating, and I to see how the state, I mean, just can say, oh, you have this variance, and they threaten all the time that they're going to take this variance away. And I really worry about that because right now we're already boarding out a significant number of individuals. But, I mean, if that variance were to disappear tomorrow, which it very well could, all right, I mean, then you're going to board out many more people. And right now, I mean, many of those people are women. When they're boarded out, you know, they are moved to counties. I mean, how many miles away are they? I mean, what's the nearest facility that they're boarded out to?
Tioga is one of the destinations. There are a couple other counties that we use.
So these are locations 30-plus miles away.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So it means that people are put in these facilities where they don't have access to public transportation, which makes it very difficult for their loved ones to visit them as well. I mean, and so this is just really hard for me that, I mean, even though, you know, look, I mean, I've... I'm sorry, what's funny about it?
Hard on you?
Nathan, would, could
yeah,
we
yeah,
just...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It is. It
that's
is hard.
Natural.
Nathan, could
yeah,
we
hard,
get back
though.
To the meeting, please?
Yeah. I mean, but it is hard because when you know that this decision, I mean, if the state changes what they want to do, which they very well could, it means that more people will get boarded out, and those folks getting boarded out is absolutely inhumane too. I mean, I'm sorry, and that's my perspective. Okay. And look, I'm very conscious of when you're sitting at this desk. And I will say I'm not one of those people that won't say I'm not in a position of power.
Nathan, could you use your microphone, please?
You know, I was once an activist like you. I'm not going to be that person, you know, because I understand that I'm in a position, I understand that I'm in a position of power. No doubt about that. I get that.
Nathan,
you know, so,
I'd like to move on.
Yeah. All right. That's fine.
Brian Robinson.
No. I mean, so, but Mike, I mean, if I may just conclude, that. This is that I think for this boarding out issue, I mean, I just don't see us. I mean, the fear of what could happen if we do not do this. It's a very big concern for me. And so, you know, until we see the more specifics of the project, I mean, I can't support a moratorium.
Thank you. Brian Robinson.
What happened to that break at 7:30?
I think I'd like to push this through and get to a vote. I think we can do that.
Okay. I mean, everybody's been talking pretty much the same points. This issue has been going for at least since November with public participation. I think we've been responsive to the public. They've certainly made their feelings known in terms of wanting to delve more into the ATI programs that we have. You know, we think we do them pretty well, very well. But could they be done better? I don't know. But let's find out. ATI is really relatively new in the criminal justice system. You know, a lot of those programs are, you know, were started 20, 30 years ago. And quite frankly, it's time to take a step back, see what works, what could work better, what doesn't work, what's new out there, the whole gamut. And I guess I'm going to where Joe went in that if the population gets reduced from what the daily average is now, great. That's good because that jail was not designed for two people in one room. It just wasn't. I don't think that's very humane. Folks need to remember there isn't anybody around this table that arrests, prosecutes, lays judgment on anyone. We are kind of the end user. The county sheriff, people get remanded to the jail, and it's not like you can say, well, we don't want them. If they say that's where they're going, then that's where they're going. And if we don't have room for them, then they have to go somewhere else. And a whole bunch of undesired issues come up when you have to, board them out, not to mention the cost. Those costs, last year, for instance, the board out costs totaled $225,000 in what can probably be termed as a normal year, an average year, as far as experience for board out costs. Close to $250,000, that could pay for some of these new initiatives that we have or will be getting as far as ATI programs, which then may very well reduce the population, which is fine. I mean, it just makes total sense for us. And you've got to remember, one of the things that we do as legislators is we are the stewards of taxpayers' money. So we have to do what we feel is right for all of the taxpayers. You know, there's taxpayers here. But there's, 100,000 taxpayers in the county. And we have to watch out for everyone's dollars, including the folks here.
Thank you. I want to tell you I've got Mike Sigler, then Will, then myself, then Kathy, and then Martha would like another chance to speak. I'll let Dan speak. Can we please be crisp and try to move this along? I'd like to get to a vote. So Mike Sigler.
I'll be crisp, Mike. I just wanted to say I am going to support the moratorium. May not say that when I'm all done. We'll see. I will say that what Leslin said I think is correct. I mean, this has been an issue in front of us for, 20 years. I mean, I served 4 years, and then I was off 4 years, and now I'm back, and it's like we're still talking about this expansion. I'd like to see the committee do some work and see where we are. But I'm along Leslin's line as well. I don't have any, I understand the problem. And I do want to say, I mean, I do see a marked change in the way police activities have been done in the course of the last 50 years. I'll blame you baby boomers for that. But it used to be that policing was done to keep the peace, and now it's to enforce laws. And I think that is a pretty marked change. I'll be interested to see what the committee comes up with. I really do wish the moratorium was 6 months as opposed to a year. But considering that we have to hit a building cycle, I think a year might be okay. I feel the need to defend some of my colleagues here. I understand what you guys are saying. Listen, there were people on here. I mean, I kind of wish Tim Joseph was here because he would have really reeled this down, I think. I mean, Mike was here earlier, Kaplinka Lair. I don't think you're going to find a group in New York State on a legislature that is as committed to ATI as this group here. I mean, I really don't see it. So I get that you have passion, and I like that passion, and I appreciate that passion. But like what Peter Stein said, I mean, the man served on enough boards. He's put in the time. So when I hear people saying, well, they're going to vote this way because they're against whatever, it's strange to me. I find myself defending people who I never really thought needed defense on this issue.
Thanks, Mike.
I mean, really, you were talking to people who have put in the time. They've done the work. So I just want you to keep that in mind when they're voting or they speak a certain way and you may not agree with them. Hey, you may not agree with me. A lot of people don't agree with me on a lot of things. But they're there for it. I mean, they understand the struggle, I think. So just keep that in mind, please.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. Nate asked Joe a lot of the questions I was wondering, but one piece that I was still curious, and this may be a Joe, it may be a Rick, were we to delay this project for a year, what would be the financial implications, both not only in the board out costs, but also in terms of the financing of the project? Do we have any sense how that might change, or is it a complete unknown?
Yeah, in terms of board out costs, again, it's $30,000 per day for every individual who stays there that we can't get back. So it's kind of a pick'em on how many you think we can get back. With respect to cost, it looks like the rate of construction inflation is about 2.8%, maybe 3%. If that's applied to the construction portion of this cost, which is $780 or so, that's about $22,000 of additional cost. The other cost issue with respect to the capital financing, not the operating cost, is what will happen with interest rates between now and this time next year. And there's a big question mark. We don't really know. We know we're in a period of unusually low interest rates right now. We don't know how long that's going to last. So that's a real uncertainty factor in the financing. What will interest rates be a year from now?
Okay. Thank you, Joe. I've wrestled with this issue a lot over the past weeks when folks started showing up at our meetings. And it's been hard for me because I essentially agree with many of the arguments and concerns that are being made. I'm embarrassed to live in a society that incarcerates so many people. The basis on which people are thrown into jails and then prisons is, in fact, racist. It is based on class. All kinds of factors that you know are utterly beyond the control of this board, but play out in ugly realities every day. Behind me, there I saw signs saying jails are toxic. It is completely true. It's been about 4 years since I've been in our jail. I've actually arranged for Dan and I are hoping to get up there later this week and take another visit. But I can tell you, it's not a happy place. It is not a happy environment. And part of that relates to the physical conditions, which are intensely overcrowded. And, you know, basically we've used up all the space so that any space conceivably that might be used for programs that would help make people's time there just a little bit better has basically been converted to housing bodies in ways that are utterly undignified. I noticed another sign behind me that said that jail expansion equals family disruption. I think that's not actually right. I think the greatest disruption is when you have to take your family and your kids and figure out how to get over to a county, you know, one or two counties over, maybe at a time that the buses aren't running, if there happens to be a bus where you can find somebody who will drive you. It is a very, very wrong thing. And so that is a reality. That's a very real cost. And I hope that those of you who are pressing for us to not do this project will really take that to heart. Where I completely agree is that there are too many people in that jail right now, and we need to get less. I don't know what that number is, but I would hope that the energy that folks have brought to this will continue to work in a positive way to figure out what we can do that would change that dynamic. And I will tonight be voting against the moratorium. Everybody should know that the key vote for this will be the bonding of the project, which probably, I gather, will be next month. So the discussion will continue. Whether or not we do this, however, does not change the reality that there are things that we can do to change the forces that put people in the jail. And I think you will find widespread agreement around this room of wanting to do that. And so keep coming, keep talking. Thank you.
I'm going to speak, then Kathy Luz Herrera, then Dooley Kiefer. I simply want to say that I would very much like to associate myself with Carol Chock's comments. I fully believe that there is a parallel course here, that we should not pass the moratorium tonight, but move ahead with those issues for everything that's been said here. And at the same time, we need to do this serious study about the ATI things. But they do not have to be mutually exclusive. They never have been with our jail, and I don't think they should be now. Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I just want to ask, please don't clap if you can, and please don't holler at me. I'm going to support the moratorium resolution, and I'll tell you why. Most of us knew it wasn't going to pass tonight. First of all, it has had a good discussion and has helped us to see the level of support that's out there, and I know a lot of y'all from a lot of different things. I was raised to respect diversity and inclusion, and I firmly believe that getting together more, I'm trying to think of another word than heterogeneous, of varied groups lends itself to better decisions, and I've seen that in practice. It's hard for me, and I dislike it when discussions fall into this these categories of ranking. I call it kind of ranking the oppressions. I've done this the longest. I know people in jail. I've talked with the experts more. I know people with law enforcement. You know, my husband was this. The fact is, you know, we may think we're better than other groups at this, but that kind of ranking isn't useful. Because when we try to come to better decisions, we need activists, we need public safety, we need legislators, we need people that build things. I've come to know through the years that I'm rarely the smartest person in the room. And for me, that is actually been a good realization because... Okay, I'm an electrician, and I work with tools. Tools change, methods change, parts change, techniques change. Something that I worked on and was really good at 5 years ago, the way I do it now wouldn't work as well. I was working with an apprentice one time, and we were unboxing these light fixtures. And he was doing this thing, and he was doing what I was doing that I had done a whole lot more than him. 5-10 times faster than me. So I looked over what he was doing. It kind of made me mad. And it was just a simple move. It was a good move. I adopted it. I do it now. I think that as a community, we can respect the diversity and inclusion of everybody here, and that a moratorium, whether it gets all the votes now or doesn't get any votes at all, we'll do something, and that'll mean that if we treat each other with respect, we might find out some things that help us not just save money, but maybe not put as many people in jail, maybe come up with a different way of approaching each other about this, because the walls aren't as clear as you know, some of us have said they are, and we know that. We don't want to label each other, and sometimes it looks like we do. I'm just going to close and tell you a story about, I grew up in Texas, and my dad used to take me to rural counties, and there was a jail there. And in Texas, you know, in some counties, you can get arrested for driving while Mexican. So it was a risk. But he would take me there to see one of his brothers was in jail there. His name was Chamaco. He was an old guy. I'm told he used to be some kind of a gangster or something. All I saw was a kind of a gray guy that was small. And he used to do these copper rubbings. It was one of the things they did for recreation. And he had done a whole bunch of them. And the one that we got after he died that came to the house that my dad displayed in his house, and then when he died, he passed it on to his eldest son, was a Virgen de Guadalupe, very detailed, very skilled, beautiful. And it has a lot of energy in it, even, you know, to this day. Yeah, the guy might have been a bad guy. He spent a lot of time in prison, and he learned how to rub copper. Well, I would like things to be better, and I've worked my whole life to try and make things be better, and sometimes I fail miserably. I would like to not fail miserably on this. I would like to maybe do something that is embarrassing because we maybe change our plan or something like that, or postpone something. And I think we should all be open to learning new things. I think we should all be open to the fact that somebody maybe younger or from somewhere else has a better way of doing it than we thought of, that there might be a new technology, that there might be a new method, that there might be new materials. And I'm proud to support this moratorium, and it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not for jail. I'll tell you this, as a openly gay Mexican, I am probably one of the first people that would, you know, be killed come the revolution because I don't keep my mouth shut and stuff like that. And I'm also somebody that in Texas would get arrested a lot and get arrested if I protested and if I went over the wall. And I've told a lot of my friends, I'm terrified of being arrested. I've seen jails in Texas. I respect people that are willing to do that, and I respect activists, and I respect that you're bringing us a message, and I'm going to listen to it. And I think there's enough of us around here that can come to it, that even if they're going to save face and do it however their way they do it, they're going to listen to you. Just don't go away. I'm glad you're here. Just keep showing us what you got. Thank you.
Dan Klein and not Drew. Dan Klein.
I had a friend who was in Tompkins County Jail for 4 months last year, and I visited him each week. And there were a lot of obstacles to visiting him. You had to call during certain hours the night before to make an appointment. One time, no one even answered the phone, so I wasn't able to make the appointment. Sometimes all the visiting slots were filled. Sometimes when I got there, I would sit in the lobby for quite a while, and nobody would come out, no explanation. One time, all the visits were called off, no explanation. I would try to bring him newspapers and magazines and books, and sometimes no problem. Other times they said, sorry, you have to bring those on Thursday before the visit or something like that. So there's all this stuff. I had to take time off from work. And if my friend had been in Watkins Glen or Owego because the jail was filled during those 4 months, I'm not sure I would have gotten there as often as I would have. You know, and I am someone that has had a flexible job and had a car. If I didn't have a car or if I didn't have a job that allowed me time off, you know, he would not have gotten any visits at all if he was in another county. I worked in a couple of youth detention facilities here in Tompkins County for several years. And, 95% of those kids were from downstate. I shouldn't say that, from cities around the state, not from Tompkins County. And they almost never got visits. And, those guys had a lot of problems, right? There's a lot of things going on in their lives. And a visit by a family member wasn't going to solve all their problems, but it didn't help. It did not help that they maybe got to talk to their family once a week on the phone. It's a pretty common theme in modern justice that it's important to keep people in their communities. It just helps. So the fact that this project will prevent 7 people from being sent to other counties to do their time, I think is a really positive thing, and that's one of the reasons that I'm supporting it. I'm also supporting the alternative to incarceration study that's going on, that's about to be launched. And I heard a lot of talk about creativity and intelligence and thinking outside the box, that we should be doing this and that you should be doing this about this issue, and I couldn't agree more, and I'm hoping to see in this study of other methods of alternative to incarceration, hoping to see that creativity unleashed. I'm hoping we can find more ways to keep people out of jail. If I thought that this project was going to put even one more person in jail, I wouldn't support it, but I don't think that's the case. This is simply keeping them in the county rather than shipping them out of the county. Thank you.
Here's what we have left. We've got Martha Robertson for a second time and Leslie McBean. Leslie, I'd like you to end it, the discussion, and then we will move to a vote. Martha Robertson.
Thank you. First, that seven is seven on average a day who would be in other counties. Some people seem not to be convinced that we have been leading on alternatives to incarceration. Now, so just a brief story. Every year we go to the New York State Association of Counties conference twice a year. I remember, I don't know, half a dozen years ago, I went to a workshop by Tom Santulli, county executive of Chemung County, because it was about how they'd use alternatives to incarceration to reduce their jail population or to avoid building the next big jail. So I went, and oh, great, what has he got? What's he got? Electronic monitoring. We've been doing electronic monitoring since 1992, I think. I talked to Sheriff in Chautauqua County last year. He can't get their judges to assign electronic monitoring today in Chautauqua County. There are people that we send home with an ankle bracelet, and they go to work, and they live with their children, and they take care of their families, because for more than 20 years, we've been doing and that's like just the first thing. That's like the low-hanging fruit is the ankle bracelets, and they're not doing it in other places. About 15 years ago, maybe more, the late 90s, we were looking at increasing jail population. Jail population was going up. This is before I was on the legislature. So the county had a study and said, you know, what do we do? And the company that came in that was expert in these things says, well, oh, you know, your population's about 90 now. So they drew a straight line on the graph. So absolutely, for sure, by 2004, you're going to have 150 people in your jail. How many do we have now? On average, 90? 150 people, for sure, by 2004. We said, we don't think so. We're going to take a chance on drug court. We're going to take a chance on beefing up assigned counsel and OAR and bail fund. We're going to take a chance on all these things. So we have today, on average, the same number of people as we had in 1996 in our jail. Guess what? The population of our county isn't the same as it was in 1996. If all we did was the same percentage as our population, then our population should be higher. We're keeping that number down. And I'm proud of that. Now, I'm also delighted that you've come and you've made this such an important issue and that you've learned about it and you're still learning and you're going to teach us, and that's great, because I'm sure there's more we can do. And, you know, I guess if some of you have, for example, the energy to go out and lobby Albany about legalizing marijuana, that might help. I'm not saying that's my position, if it is or not, but I'm saying if some of those people are incarcerated because of marijuana, well, then maybe you should work on that. If this is a very logical resolution. This is a very logical resolution. Look, let's just wait. We're going to do a study. We're going to do an intensive study. By the way, talk about intensive studies. One of the ways people are in jail is if they have bad defense attorneys.
Oh, yeah.
So Marty's nodding. So a few years ago, and this is like the first year Joe was here. This is the king of task forces, this guy. We said, we really want to look at our assigned counsel program. How's it working? Is there a better way to do it? Let's compare to other counties, other systems. Is there a, is public defender better? All different formats. So Ray Schlatter was appointed chair, but we have a notebook this thick about our assigned counsel program. I'm sure Joe can give you one if you want it. And we came out and said, well, we spent about a year on this. We have this much paper on it, and we think we do pretty damn well. And there were some things that we decided to tweak and work on and try to improve. And one of them was to make sure that we had enough staffing in the office that helps assign people to their attorneys. So we take this stuff really seriously. Now, as I said, this is a logical resolution. So we're going to study this issue because you've re-brought it to our attention. It's not a new idea. By the way, it was only an 8-7 vote that kept us from building a new jail in 2004. And when I talk about what difference does it make to have run for office, that's the vote I talk about, because if I hadn't run, I think the person before me would have voted for the jail and we would have spent $30 million on a bigger jail. So this is a logical resolution. Let's study it. Let's wait and see. I would support it if there were no human costs to waiting. There's dollar costs, and Joe just pointed out, and there might even be big dollar costs if we're really talking about another quarter of a million or half a million. Another quarter of a million or half a million in board out costs. But the thing that bothers me the most is what Dan just described, is the fact that if we have to spend another year with those seven people a day not being able to see their families, I don't think that's a responsible choice.
Leslin, and then we're going to vote.
Who? Martha. Well, I don't want to see the headlines tomorrow.
I didn't say look, that's my position.
Thank you. Say loud and clear. My dear colleagues,
if that's your goal.
My dear colleagues, listen. Look, I can read the tea leaves and see that this is going down. And maybe there's another time that will come back, as I'm hearing, there might be a different time for this. Yes, we're boarding people out. But we're taking a stand for me and saying, let's take a look at this and see how we don't have that many people in the jail that we have to board any out, period. So I don't think that it's that hurtful. Let me rephrase that. We've been doing it. No, we don't want to spend another day doing it. But if it's going to mean that we never, ever have to do it again, I think we could do that. Interesting enough, listening to your comments, Dan, that it seems that whether people are boarded out or they're here, sometimes they get visits, sometimes they don't. No, it happens when they're right here. Okay. This is a larger, and for the folks who've been here, this is a larger community conversation. I want to challenge all of you, and you're organized, I heard that, and you're probably doing some of this. The buck doesn't always stop here, and I think people may think so. I want to and encourage you to be at the justice courts, to be where the courts are, where those decisions are getting made,
where people are being sentenced to the custody of the sheriff or sent to the custody of the sheriff of Tompkins County. Because when the judge says that's what's happening, we have to do something with them. We don't have a choice. So be there. Be at the courts. Look at what's going on there. As a, there's a larger community effort, conversation, movement around restorative justice, around changing this system of injustice to a system of justice. It's larger than just saying we're not going to expand our jail. We need to start at other places as well, and I'm hoping that's happening. Because we can say we're not going to do it, and people will still be sentenced. So I'm encouraging you and challenging you to please make sure that that's happening as well. We can't control what the judges do. We cannot. I wish we had that power, but we don't. There are things we can do here, and we're trying our best here. I appreciate you all, like Martha said, raising this issue up again, and hope it will be a sustained movement, because one of the doggone things that frustrates me about this community is that we are quick to jump up in a moment with something when it's hot, and then when it gets a little cool, we disappear, and there's no sustained movement to make change happen. We've been talking about this. I've been here for 25 years, and 25 years we've been fighting this issue. And I see the faces change, and I've still been here doing the same thing. And I get new faces coming in trying to do it, and people move to the next issue. But there's no sustained movement. If we are serious about making this change happen and keeping people who should not be in jail out of jail, the nonviolent crimes, and making jail something more about correction and rehabilitation rather than just correction, then let's make that movement happen. I'll get off my soapbox for now. I can have another soapbox at a different place. But, okay, there's more to just being here. I have new constituents now. I don't know if any of them are here, who live on West Hill and who are concerned about the crime that's happening up there and the violation of their feeling. And they'd like to see people punished for those crimes. That's a balancing act that me, as a legislature, I have to deal with. Okay? Punishing people for violating somebody's rights, breaking into their homes, their cars, and scaring them half to death, and stealing their stuff and whatever else, and threatening them. And not keeping people in jail, especially people who are pre-sentence. We went to a NYSAC conference, and Martha's right. We went to a presentation of innovations in ATI, and Peter and I and our probation officer sitting there saying, well, we do all those things. We didn't learn anything new. All the things that other counties are now saying they're new, we've been doing. And I said this at our last legislature meeting. I don't know if any one of you were here. When I looked at the stats that were passed around about the number of people who are pre-sentenced in facilities close to us, no, we're not stellar because we still have 51% of the people in our jail who are pre-sentenced. We still have 51 people who pre-sentenced, 49% of them who have been sentenced, found guilty and sentenced to something. Our neighbors in Syracuse, in one of their facilities, 95% of the people are pre-sentenced. 5% sentenced. We are not doing too bad in Tompkins County. We could do better, and we're trying. Thank you.
Let's proceed to a vote. We're voting on the member filed resolution N, authorizing a one-year moratorium on the jail expansion renovation project. I will call for a roll call vote.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No.
We have 3 ayes, 11 noes.
The motion fails. Leslin, thank you for bringing it. Carol Chalk, and then I want to take a break.
I'm not on public safety, but for those who are, if there's any way when the motion about proceeding with this project comes to us, if that could include a clause in it or something about our intention to also move forward with ATI as well, that would be helpful, or a companion resolution.
Carol,
that would
I don't
be
think
helpful.
People are listening. I think we should recess for a break. Let's be back at 4:15.
I should have gone to Walt Disney.
Wow.
Folks, let's get started again. We've got a couple of staff members I'd like to see if we could take care of.
Yes, sir.
Ed Marks is here. Carol, do you want to take that?
Sure.
I'd be happy to start. And thank you, Mike, for...
That's how you do it.
Thank you, Mike, for letting Ed get back to what he needs to get to so that... Are we started? Okay.
Is that picking me up?
Is it picking me up? Great. Okay. Well, thank you, Ed.
Folks, could we take your conversations outside or sit down, please?
The Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee will have a meeting at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Note that we meet the third Wednesday of the month. So even though we had a special meeting tonight, we'll be meeting tomorrow morning. It is at the old jail. Watch the time carefully each month, because for the first few months that time is going to change. I will just, for committee members, you should have gotten in your boxes a revised version of the resolution about the energy plan. And due to some additional comments I've gotten from the planning department, I'm sorry to say that I'm going to bring you just some other minor additions just for wording that Ed wanted. So if you have a chance to look at those, that would be good. We do have some appointments, but they'll be on the consent agenda,
yeah,
I assume. Okay. So, yeah, I was just killing time till the room quieted down. Packets page, you got a page number for me? Yes. Packet page 21, we had a short meeting just in advance of this meeting at which we unanimously passed and bringing to you just the budget adjustment. It is a resolution M, docket ID 4652A, budget adjustment park foundation funds into the 2014 budget for Solar Tompkins project, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mike Sigler. You want to speak to it, Carol?
I think only if there are questions.
I would like to ask a question of our county attorney. Jonathan, do you see any impediment to our going ahead with this?
No.
Thank you. Ready to vote?
No.
Dooley Kiefer.
The Solar Tompkins Steering Committee is... What is it? Is it it's an unofficial body? Is it an LLC? What is it?
The Solar Tompkins Steering Committee are the body of people with representatives from all of the towns that have not heretofore had the opportunity to be a part of this project. Only the residents of 3 towns, Caroline, Danby, and Dryden, were able to be in the participate as part of the grant that was given and operated through the town of Caroline. And so this is the group that has stayed with the project and now expanded to include representatives who come from each of the additional towns who have been trying to figure out how to scale this up. They are in the process of incorporating, as I understand it, but they came to the county to become the fiscal agent for this grant, and we approved the grant unanimously in December. It was really just an accident of our timing. You'll see on our consent agenda tonight, we have five or six different grants that we accept that at the same time we make the budget adjustment. Because we had already adopted to the 2014 budget, this grant didn't come in, you know, it wasn't put into the books, into that big, thick book. And if it were already 2014 when we get a grant, we do it at the same time. So this one we just had to split up. We made the big decision to proceed with this project in December. We're now just making the budget adjustment. Joe can speak to the role that we're being asked to play, either Joe or Ed, whoever you'd prefer.
Probably best from Ed, but basically we're a bridge between the Park Foundation and the Solarize Group. So the money comes into us. We then provide the funding to the group in a structured way. Ed's here.
Who's our contract with Ed?
If I could explain why I'm asking this question. All the other budget adjustments, I know what our departments are. I know what agencies are. This entity, I wasn't sure if it was incorporated. You said it's not, but they may be working toward it. I would like to feel confident that whatever money we pass through will get used as the Park Foundation expects it to get used, and I guess I just want to have assurance about that.
So let me ask Ed then to answer the question, who's our financial arrangement with and our responsibility?
Oh, there he is.
Ed, I can't hear you.
Yeah, is the mic on?
So we have receiving the funds from the Park Foundation, we will have a responsibility to make sure the funds are used in the manner for which they were granted.
Is the we the planning department then?
The county, the planning department being the administrative entity for the county in this particular case. The project will be undertaken under contract with a project manager. So there's already been a request for qualifications that's been issued for a project manager. The steering committee will be interviewing, a subgroup of the steering committee interviewing the candidates, and a project manager will be selected with whom we will contract to implement the project in accordance with the grant terms and conditions. So we will be making sure that the funds are dispersed through the project manager in accordance with the grant. The decisions on the day-to-day operations of the program as a volunteer group, the steering committee will lead that effort and oversee the project manager on day-to-day operational budget, but we will be assuring that the funds are dispersed in accordance with the grant.
So we have no legal liability in this?
I no more so than any other kind of pass-through grant that we do, which we do with other programs as well.
I'm supportive of this, but I'm nervous. That's all.
Well, we will have a contract, and all funds will be dispersed under a contract through a project manager.
Jim Dennis.
Ed, have you done these kind of things before?
Well, not exactly. I mean, we've done different things similar. I mean, I guess the most similar thing I can think of is the snowmobile grants, where we pass through money from the state to snowmobile clubs that are volunteer groups that maintain trails.
Okay, we're ready to vote on this. All those in favor, resolution A. No, I'm sorry. F.
M.
Please raise your hand.
M.
N?
M. Resolution M.
I'm saying it wrong. Resolution M. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Brian. Nathan, would you please take resolution L?
I would be happy to do that.
Jay, this is, I said, I was thinking, never mind. I'm sorry, I'm a little delirious at this point. I apologize. All right, so I'd like to move Resolution L. It's the authorization to enter a joint services agreement with the town of Covert to provide assessment services, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion. Dooley Keeper.
I called in some changes, which I think have been placed in people's packets.
Yes.
But I did not get any feedback. So I'd like to offer those changes as
Are you moving an amendment?
As amendments. Can I do them all together?
Sure. Yes.
I did it.
When moved, is there a second for the amendment? We have them in front of us.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Seconded by Jim. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was just going to say if Julie would.
Whoever I am.
Yeah, if Dooley would like to talk, say what those amendments specifically are they different than the ones that you had at the committee level? Or are they the same?
These grew out of discussion at the committee, but these did not go through your committee.
Okay. So this doesn't show what the changes are. So
oh, you don't have any copy with boldface and underlined?
I don't.
Red folder.
Oh, okay. sorry. I didn't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. Okay.
I simplified the language about how this is not unlike what Governor Cuomo would like us to do, and I put in more specific information about the timing because it's complicated. The agreement's for 16 months. The amount estimated that will come in is for 12 months. But the budget adjustment is for 10 months. And that seemed like important distinctions to put in there.
I have Jim Dennis, then Martha Robertson, then Kathy.
I just want to say thank you to Jay and for doing this. And it's a small step for us, that it could be a giant leap for mankind if we can go to other places around. So a lot of props to you for doing that.
By the way, this amendment is friendly to me, if that makes any difference.
Well, it looks like we have people who want to talk on the amendment. So on the amendment, Martha Robertson.
Well, I see that it's consistent with, Governor Cuomo's stated priority. I'm actually thinking it's such a really good idea, but I'm sure we're not going to get credit for it 2 years from now when they're looking at shared services, so I think we should better put this off for 2 years.
No. Moving right along. Kathy Luz Herrera.
My suggestion is equally constructive. Actually, it's a question. Have you got something against the word furtherance?
No.
Okay. As long as you admit that there's no bias, then I'll support this.
Were there other hands? Ready to vote on the amendment?
On the amendment.
Ready to vote on the amendment. Those in favor of the amendments that Dooley has proposed, raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Peter. Okay, on the resolution as amended now. Peter, then Carol.
I had a question. What's the financial implication for Jay's operation? Do we make money out of this or lose money or
yeah,
what?
It's about $17,370. But Jay, actually, maybe we can just have Jay speak to this. But I don't believe that there's any implications on the expense side in terms of staffing or anything.
Yeah, we'll receive $15 a parcel. So for a full year, it's about $23,000. The additional work for the 1,500 parcels is not going to cause additional staff. There's some economies of scale that you can do, and we can take on this work with the staffing we have. However, due to pending retirements, I may be coming back to you in the 2015 budget to use this income to offset at least one additional staff to help deal with those pending retirements.
Any other questions? You ready to vote?
Wait, I want to
Carol, I'm sorry.
So I just want to hear Jay talk a little bit about, I know when at budget time you talked to us about staffing being tight, and this isn't all that much money to, that actually goes towards the staffing. So I'm just trying to understand how this, how we don't end up stretched.
Yeah, with an additional 1,500 parcels, it's not that much more work that, you know, I can't say I'm going to add 0.2 full-time equivalents of an appraiser. The staffing level we have can accommodate this amount of work. However, two of my most senior evaluation people have said they are going to retire. One I would anticipate to retire this year, and one said February of 2015. I can't replace 60 years of valuation experience with two people fresh off the street. That just isn't something that I can expect to do. So this small amount of revenue can help offset when I come to you to say I need one more valuation staff to replace two with three. It, in no means is $23,000 going to do that, but it's something.
Thanks. Anything else? On the resolution as amended, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. All right, back to the agenda. I don't see a municipal official. I don't think I'd let him speak if he was here.
yeah. All right.
What do you want to do about privilege of the floor for legislators? Do you want to have that, or do you want to move on? What do people want to do? Martha?
Well, I have something really quick to say.
Well, you want to do it. Anybody else want to do it? All right, let's take a couple. If you can refrain, let's refrain. I think Kathy was first with a hand up.
No, actually, I want to add something to the agenda when the time comes.
Oh, okay. Martha, then.
I just want to repeat something Joe told me. That there used to be this, the slogan ATI was another tax increase. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, that was a sign in the jail. There was a sign in the jail not that long ago that claimed that's what ATI is, another tax increase. And in 2005, the district attorney's race was fought on whether we should support ATIs or not. And Gwen Wilkinson won the fight and the election, and we have those ATIs. So we've come a long way, but a lot of people need to be reminded, I guess.
And our next big fight is the legalization of marijuana.
And Martha's right behind
Dan
that.
Klein. Dan Klein.
Yeah, I want to mention that.
Soundbite.
Come on, folks, let's move ahead.
I want to mention that this past week, the Danby Town Board accepted its first conservation easement from the Conservation Advisory Council. So this is kind of historic. I'm really optimistic about this. Conservation easement is a voluntary agreement between a landowner and, in this case, the town of Danby, in perpetuity, saying that on this particular piece of land, no houses will be built. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's it in a nutshell. And this is hopefully the first of a whole string of them. It took us a couple of years to get to this point, but I think it's going to move faster now. And I think the other towns are going to be interested in learning more about this. So I just wanted to put it on your radar.
All right. Shall we move on? Chair's report. I would just say that I attended the kickoff for the Farm to Bistro program, the Bistro, on Cuga Street. TC3 was there. A lot of people. We all froze to death because it was an unheated space at this point.
Oh, my gosh.
And even the refreshments, with the exception of hot coffee, didn't go very well. But it was an important day, an important project, thanks to the efforts of TC3 Foundation, which is going to be working on this project, and thanks to a state grant from the Economic Development Council. That's right. And also a private donation of almost $2 million that has helped this move along, and something which will be a real asset. There isn't a program like this in the state that we're aware of. So PC3 gets another feather in its hat as this moves along. They expect to have this in operation by the fall semester. I have some appointments. Do we have any chairs? No, I guess I don't. The appointments I have will be on. No, I do have one appointment. I'm going to appoint Dan Klein to the Charter Committee effective March 1. Thank you, Dan, for being interested in that committee. That brings us up to 5, and I think that's a good number to have for that committee. County Administrator's appoint. County Administrator's report.
Rick and I have a rather long PowerPoint tonight on the newest GASB issuance, so
yeah.
It should be done by 10-ish.
that perked Leslin up.
I'm passing tonight. Thanks.
County Attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Me too. I'm passing.
Finance Director, Rick Snyder.
Pass.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa. Getting in the groove, huh, Rick? Like that.
Any resolutions to be added or withdrawn?
Yes.
Kathy.
Thank you. I have resolution O to be added to the agenda, award of bid and budget adjustment, Tompkins County Main Courthouse Basement Renovations Project.
Is there a second for that? Martha Robertson. Any discussion? All in favor? Those opposed? That's unanimous. Consent agenda. Anybody want some pull, just holler. Resolution A, authorization to accept a grant and budget adjustments from the Office of Indigent Legal Services, assigned counsel. That's ID 4631. Resolution B, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, ID 4620. Resolution C, budget adjustment, supervision, and treatment services for juveniles program, Department of Probation and Community Justice. That's resolution ID 4600. Out of the Health and Human Services Committee, budget adjustment, Unity House, ID 4. Resolution E, budget adjustment, Lakeview Mental Health Services, Mental Health Department, ID 4642. F, budget adjustment, New York State Office of Mental Health, Mental Health Clinic, ID 4641. Resolution G, budget adjustment, New York State Office of Mental Health, Family, and Children's Services, the Mental Health Department, ID 4640. Resolution H, budget adjustment, Medicaid, Social Services Department, ID 4636. Resolution J, authorization to accept a four-year grant, Sober Truth on Preventing Underage Drinking Act, Stop Act, from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services, ID 4630. Administration reduce use and access of alcohol by Youth Services Department. Resolution J, authorization to accept. That's a pull.
Is that okay. Consent? I didn't think that was.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So we've pulled Resolution D and Resolution J. Is that correct? All right. We have some appointments on the consent agenda. To the advisory board. Youth Services Board, Kara West and Barbara Sadovnik, excuse me. Stop DWI Advisory Board, Stacy Kangalisa, Mike. Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Douglas Keefe, Brian Robinson. Environmental Management Council, Stephen P. Bisson. Traffic Safety Committee, Dooley Kiefer, Martha Robertson. Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board, Mike Sigler. Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Dan Klein. Home Ownership Oversight Committee, Will Burbank, Carol Chalk. Planning Advisory Board, Carol Chalk, Will Burbank. Regional Forest Practice Board, Mike Sigler. Water Resources Council, Dooley Kiefer. Board of Health, Will Burbank. Personal Emergency Response Advisory Board, Peter Stein. Recreation Partnership, Peter Stein. Was there a second person brought forward on that?
No.
Okay. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda?
It says Dan Klein here.
No.
Motion.
That one was pulled. The only one we're doing is Peter Stein. Mm-hmm. Mike Sigler, is the motion? Is there a second? Seconded by Les Lima, being Claiborne. All those in favor of the consent agenda, raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Go to committee reports. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
There's nothing going on.
Can I plead the fifth? Or, no. I do want to just mention, I know we just covered it in consent, but Resolution A that we approved is that's a big deal. And that we could almost consider the start of the CJATI study. It's exactly the sort of stuff we would be looking to get, and we've already got it. My understanding, I'm not familiar with this program, but I do know from committee that it's been very successful. I don't understand how we got it. We must have a hook somewhere with assigned counsel somewhere. I don't know where that would be, but so that's a good thing. Our meeting was held on February 10th, and the majority of it was discussion and the ultimate creation of the CJATI study group, its composition, its chairs, which will be Susie Cook and Deb Dietrich. They are, and I kind of wanted to have just a brief opportunity while these folks were still here, but there is, as promised, room for public participation as far as being a member of that group. It will be made up primarily of agency heads that comprise CJATI. But there are a couple of, let's call them voting members from the public that will be part of that group. They're accepting applications now for that. I believe they can be done through the clerk's office, our clerk. Is that correct? In the normal application process. And my understanding is we've received several already, and we'll continue to have that open. CJATI itself, I believe, meets next Wednesday at noon. And obviously a big part of that, if not all of it, is going to be devoted to this subject. And the first thing they're going to need to do is figure out the composition of that group and probably come up with some just real rudimentary goals and how they're going to go about their work. We've given them 6 months. I think they're aware that they're going to have to meet, more than monthly. We've asked that if they could, to please have at least half of their meetings in the evening. Again, being responsive to folks that ask for this, they will be giving the Public Safety Committee monthly updates as to their progress. They seem very enthused, at least the chairs, and their work, and I know some of the other folks are as well. So I'm looking for good things to come out of that. As far as scheduling, our next meeting is actually scheduled for March 10th. In my eye, that doesn't give that group a whole lot of time to get their feet under them. So I may be asking that we postpone our Public Safety Committee meeting a week or so. Joe, if you want to bring, you said that sometime next month you would be bringing a bond resolution for the project. if you could keep me updated on that, and we would certainly want to meet on that prior to whatever legislative meeting that we would have. So that's about it, unless anybody has any questions.
Will the members of the task force have to be officially appointed by the legislature? I sort of got the feeling that it was so vague when we said, yes, go ahead. They didn't know how many members, at least two from the public.
Mm-hmm.
I got the impression that these appointments would be well served by being actually ratified by legislative appointment. Is that the intent?
I think so. Seriously. No.
May I try this?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think what we're talking about here is a subcommittee of the ATI committee. So it's up to that ATI committee to make the appointments if they want to bring in some other people from outside to that subcommittee.
Yeah, that was my – because we kind of left it – I don't think they're real firm as to their numbers.
No, they weren't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know when they will be.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Trying to give them a little bit of time to get organized, to get on their feet, and they need to report back to us on the Public Safety Committee. So to have them meet next week, which is always the fourth Wednesday, and then turn right around, 10 days later, and report back to us who's on the committee. I'm not sure they would have enough time to do that. Joe?
Yeah, I think the way this may work, we do want to vet this through public safety somehow, but we also want to get going.
Right.
So we may have to kind of improvise on how we do that. We didn't envision this as being subject to full legislative confirmation or approval because it came through public safety to CJATI. So the way this is working so far, the applications will come in. Deb and Susie will be reviewing those applications, and we'll review some recommendations with public safety, whether it's in part or in whole. Haven't quite figured out yet, but we'd really like to fast-track getting this group going because it's going to take 6 months. And I think everybody would like to believe that if there are recommendations that come out of it, we can get the recommendations out in time to build into the 2015 budget.
Right.
So we'd really like to get it going quickly.
So the recommendations for membership on the task force will come to public safety for reaction. Is that what I'm hearing? And so it might be better not to delay the public safety committee meetings.
Or my understanding of it was, and I haven't asked anyone, is that if a couple of public safety members, I mean, not necessarily me, but whoever, would like to be part of that process with the chairs to come up with that, that's fine. I really don't see that as being a problem.
Jim Dennis?
Joe, I have a question about, and to both of you, the bond reso for the jail. I believe it's going back to public safety for a recommendation.
Right.
And if you're going to be bringing that in March, right, so that would be at the March or April, that would be at a public safety meeting in March?
We're looking at the March cycle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then to budget after that. So it needs to go through both committees and then come to the full legislature for a supermajority.
I would hope that it's not a five-minute meeting before a ledge meeting. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Because I believe that vote will, there'll be a rerun of whatever.
Less limit being Claiborne?
I got my questions answered. Thank you.
Martha Robertson.
Did I hear that conversation that when we do look at the bond resolution, then we'll get a full description of the project?
You will.
Yes.
Okay, and that will be repeated at the legislature meeting when it's reviewed there?
The presentation will go to both committees and the full legislature. It'll be a typical Labella PowerPoint overview.
All right, as far as moving the committee meeting around, I really hope we don't have to do that.
Okay. Brian, are you finished?
No, because I think we have to iron that little piece out first. Hopefully, that the group can come to us in that short a time with a recommendation. I mean, that's a critical piece of this, is the composition of that group. And I'm just not sure that they're going to be able to do that because they're not even meeting till next week.
Okay, the notice went out. I saw it the day after public safety. Our committee meeting, there was a notice about applications, if anybody's interested. Was there a deadline on that for people to apply?
February
24th.
February
24th.
February 24th.
Yeah. February 24th.
And CJATI is the 26th. So they would have 2 days to review and figure that out. I mean, I'm not sure that's...
Well, I mean, if they can't get it done, can they move their meeting as opposed to...
Theirs is a lot bigger than ours.
Right. Can you work on that after?
Yeah. We'll leave it the way it is, and just a heads up that if they can't do it, we may have to delay it a week, which is still a week before budget.
Thank you, Brian. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
I don't have much of a report except to say that our reading and discussion group will continue to work on getting that program up, as well as looking towards the implementation of our next climate survey. So we're working on getting survey tools that can be used. It's a quick, very quick report. WDIC will meet next week, Wednesday.
Any questions? Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein.
Well, let's see. We had a meeting on February 11th, and we had a bunch of resolutions, and two of them were pulled. So the first one that was pulled was 4643, a budget adjustment for Unity House.
You want to move that?
I'd like to move it, yes.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Dooley, you pulled it?
I pulled it because I feel very strongly that the explanation of why we're doing this should be in as a whereas. So I moved the first sentence from the explanation up to be a second whereas and left the final sentence in the explanation down there. I think you all have copies of this in your folders. Peter, did you look at it?
No, I didn't.
So that's an amendment I will move. I hope someone will second it.
Amendment's been moved by Dooley. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Dan. Discussion on the amendment.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the amendment, please?
Whereas there is currently an allocation indicated in the 2014 county budget for Unity House, and this adjustment request represents revenue from New York State Office of Mental Health of $67,878 to be allocated to Unity House for 2014 calendar year. Now, therefore, be it.
Can I ask Can I ask a question? So is this something that came to committee and was rejected by committee, or just...
No.
Oh, and do you feel like it strengthens it?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Not
or whoever, the chair of the committee.
Not particularly, but I have nothing against it.
Gildy, are you moving the changes in the explanation as well?
I'm moving the first sentence in the explanation up to be a second whereas, because in my view, the resolution itself should explain why we're doing what we're doing.
Okay, can we vote on the amendment? Those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? It's two opposed. Martha. Then on the resolution as amended, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Sort of curious. I didn't get to explain the point of the whole thing. But the point of it, which I have written down here, is that the explanation for why we should do this is that it offers clients some choice of where it is, where they go. Opens a number of beds in another institution. That was the rationale for it.
Peter, Resolution J was also pulled?
Yeah. And that's also, let's see, which one is that?
Authorization to accept 2-year grant, magnified results grant
right.
cycle from the Community Foundation.
Yeah.
You want to move that?
I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy. Discussion? Dooley?
I pulled it because I was baffled by the title of the resolution. So I went to the memo that came attached with it, and the result of looking at that has me rewording the title of the resolution to match the language that was in the memo. So it doesn't, there's no substantive change. It's purely for clarification. We're accepting an award. And the award is for, what's in quotes, the 2-year magnified results grant program.
Is that friendly?
I hope it's friendly.
No, I'm sorry. It's not friendly to me.
You want to move it as an amendment, Dooley?
I guess I'll move it as an amendment.
Second.
I want to explain the other change in the...
That's in a second.
...which is part of my motion... The wrong verb form is in the final whereas. That's the other change.
Well, you've moved an amendment. I haven't seen a second.
No, I was explaining the amendment included two changes.
Okay. I think it fails for lack of a second. On the original resolution, those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Peter, anything else? On your report from Health and Human Services?
Well, I was trying to emulate my predecessor and give a rather lengthy report of what happened at the meeting, but I feel I'm not up to it. But let me give a shot. The things that happened at the meeting that I found sort of interesting was this. Actually, this last resolution that we just passed, it sounded like a magnified results grant from the Community Foundation to support implementation of results-based accountability framework. Now, we had some discussion as to what that means, and I was quite impressed by it. What we were told by Amy was that this was going to be a way that you could really follow through on the particular grants and the programs that they funded to see whether, in fact, they actually do meet the goals for these particular programs. So I have not really heard about that before, but that sounded like a good idea. And so I voted for that enthusiastically. And what else did I learn there? Let's see. There was something that I found really quite remarkable because it just was not my experience in life. They talked about the program to stop underage drinking and underage smoking for young people. And it was, you know, I had sort of thought just walking around the Cornell campus that drinking has been a huge problem as long as I've been at Cornell, and there's an enormous amount of underage drinking that goes on, and yet I hardly see anyone smoking a cigarette anymore. And I was surprised to hear that with young people, she told us that there was considerably more underage smoking than there was underage drinking, that the underage smoking was considered a bigger problem than the underage drinking. So I found that a complete surprise and anti-intuitive. But those were the two things that I heard at the meeting that I found.
Questions for Peter.
Reporting. Huh?
I was asking if you have anybody has questions.
I think that it was more of a concern. I don't think there's more people smoking than there are drinking.
No. Yeah, but there was more of a concern. Right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Peter. Facilities and Infrastructure, Kathy Lucerera, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a meeting today before this meeting that, well, it wasn't exactly like speed dating, but it was a lot of fun. In 15 minutes, we dealt with, well, we skipped minutes approval, but we got to talk about the Waterberg Road Bridge, which we had an action item to decide on the preferred design alternative. And some folks from the public came and talked to us about it, and the committee kind of wanted to move forward on it, but with discussion with Jeff Smith, the highway super, no, the highway director, we decided to postpone it until the next meeting. So in the meantime, hopefully there'll be a little communication about it. The issue mainly has to do with concern about possible speed increase if it goes to a two-lane, and there's some mitigating factors that might make it not be quite so bad, the fact that the road isn't being straightened out so much. So that will make it to where people don't necessarily speed up, and possible traffic calming measures. So tune in more on that. The others, you dealt with the courthouse basement renovation project, and I can't remember, was the other one just for us? Anyway, our next meeting is March 17th, soon, 10:30 to 12:30. No, really, the one about the auditor final payment mechanical work contractor. Was that just internal? Okay, thank you. It's late. Any questions?
Will.
Yes, thank you. Kathy, the courthouse renovation project, this is the OCOFA space, is that correct? Or?
Yes.
And what is the magnitude of the project? Or what?
Well, that's a good question.
$298,000.
What he said.
And that will be yielding more space for the courts, basically? Is that?
As far as I know,
they're going to move surrogates down there. That's what I heard.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha, then Carol.
I like the last line of the explanation. The county will initially pay all design and construction costs and be reimbursed by the New York State Unified Court System.
Well, actually, it's in their budget. So we're assured that they are going to make, well, we're as assured as we ever can be, they're going to make payment.
Carol?
Yeah, well, I asked the question at committee and got the answer. We don't have any choice about doing this. We're glad there should be reimbursement. If the court says jump, we are instructed to jump.
Kathy, so, I think we actually need to move that resolution.
Oh, yeah, thank you. The one that was added to the agenda, Resolution O, it's an award of bid and budget adjustment, Tompkins County, Maine Courthouse Basement Renovations Project.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion further? Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Unanimous.
Thanks.
Anything else, Kathy?
Oh, if there are no more questions or comments?
I would just say, speaking of Waterberg, this spring, we will have spring. I think it would be nice if some of us that haven't been to Waterberg lately or ever take a trip out there and see where Waterberg is and maybe places like Speedsville or some of the Danby areas or Groton City, for example. Names we use a lot here, but it'd be good to revitalize those in all of our memories. Economic Development, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. The committee has not met since we met last, but we will be meeting on Monday, March 3rd at 3:30 in the Old Yale Conference Room, and that concludes my report.
Any questions?
I believe you have a resolution.
Didn't we do that already?
Yeah, we did.
No.
Ah, IDA appointments.
My bad, you're right.
Resolution K.
Thank you. It's too late. I'm sorry. I will move Resolution K, appointments to Industrial Development Agency, and I will so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? All those in favor, raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Government Operations, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes, the Government Operations Committee will be meeting on Tuesday, February 25th at 5:30. As you know, there are many developments with the airport, so we will actually have three resolutions for the airport and a report slash discussion on airport terminal security improvements and a feasibility study that's being done. Joe and I will be meeting with Bob Nicholas tomorrow to actually talk about that in greater detail as well.
Thank you. Questions for Nathan? We're making terrific speed here. Carol, did you make your full report on planning, or do you need to...
Yeah, I just want to make sure. Did everybody on PEAK get the redlined copy of the energy resolution in their boxes tonight?
Yeah.
It looks like this with a bunch of red lines. No? But anybody who didn't can see me, and you now should have in your email another version of that that has just a few minor blue lines, and those were all fairly minor things suggested by Ed Marks tonight that I have already typed in and sent out to you. It's in preparation for 10:30 tomorrow morning. I expect you to have done your homework. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. Anything more for Carol? I can report on the Charter Review Committee that we will have our first meeting tomorrow at 3:30 in the Old Jail. And we will. The first thing we'll be talking about is changing our meeting time so that we can accommodate our new member. And we will also begin looking at how we're going to dissect the charter and move through it this year. I was wrong. It's not the Old Jail. It's here in Chambers. Thank you, Kathy. The old library committee won't meet until we get the response from the request for expressions of interest. I can never get that one. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. We are meeting the 24th at 4 p.m. And that ends my report.
Anything for Jim? Minutes of the previous meeting, February 6, 2014. Someone want to move those? Martha Robertson. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? All those in favor, raise your hand.
Aye.
All those opposed? Dooley Kiefer's opposed. Carol, did you vote? Okay. One opposed. Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn?
No.
Brian, seconded by Will. Those in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, folks.